informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. Nearly 1,000 firefighters are still working in southern Arizona to battle the massive Aspen wildfire. The blaze is said now to only be about 15% contained. It's already, though, scorched nearly 20,000 acres, as well as swept through an entire mountain ski resort town, forcing evacuations and destroying hundreds of homes and businesses. Officials say the fire is being fueled by winds gusting up to 50 miles an hour and extremely dry brush. Italian police say they've launched an operation against a group they suspect of having ties to the Al-Qaeda terrorist network. Correspondent Suzanne Chislett has the latest on the pre-dawn raids that reportedly netted 6 arrests.
About 170 Italian police took part in the raids in and around the northern city of Milan. Those arrested are thought to include 5 Tunisians and 1 Moroccan. The raids were carried out by financial police who targeted around 40 sites. The suspects are accused of providing financial and logistical support to a militant Algerian group known as the Salafist Group for Preaching and Combat, or GSPC. A police source said the men were not themselves suspected of carrying out terror attacks, but the operation was part of a major international sweep against terror organizations. Suzanne Chislett, London.
German Foreign Minister Joschka Fischer has wrapped up now a meeting with Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak to discuss the Middle East peace plan. The two men held talks in Cairo and agreed to combine the efforts of the so-called quartet, the U.S., United Nations, European Union, and Russia, with more moderate Arab states. And Fischer praised Egypt for its role in attempting to bring a peace.
We agreed all together that we should combine our efforts within the quarter, together with moderate Arab states, especially with Egypt, to move forward and to implement the roadmap. This is now, I think, very important, the implementation of the roadmap. And once again, Egypt is playing there a crucial role.
The German minister's visit to Egypt is part of a tour of several Middle Eastern countries this week.
What's the big news in allergy medicine this season? It's a new name in non-drowsy relief, Allivert. New Allivert starts dissolving the instant it touches your tongue, without water. So you can take Allivert inside, outside, in your car, wherever you are. Allivert is non-drowsy 24-hour relief in a quick-dissolving tablet. New Allivert. Allergy medicine you can take right when you need it, wherever you are. Allivert. Use as directed.
This is Dr. Danny. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Dr. Danny.
Hey.
Man, listen. We're having a hard time potty training our son.
Well, that's a common problem. How old is your boy?
He's 26.
Paul, I have some bad news. At this age, potty training will be near impossible.
You're kidding me?
No, but Paul, I do have some good news.
All right, man. What?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
NASA says it may be putting a space shuttle back in orbit as soon as December. The New York Times is quoting agency officials who say an upcoming report on the space shuttle Columbia disaster may detail new problems, but if the agency repairs shuttle hardware, officials should be able to resume missions to the International Space Station sooner than they thought. More than 250,000 Saturn L series cars are being recalled now by General Motors. Officials say potential exhaust system failures can result in fires. Those problems have been reported in model year 2000 to 2003 cars equipped with 2.2-liter engines.
My cat Boots got stuck way up in a tree. My dad saw how scared I was. He climbed up there and got it down. I feel bad. I know he hurt his back. I saw him call the doctor.
The moment of choice. What will the doctor give you, Tylenol or Advil? Truth is, doctors nationwide choose Advil most for muscle aches, strains, and sprains. Advil can give you longer-lasting relief than Tylenol on tough pain.
Boots is okay. Dad's feeling better. How great is that?
For better relief, advance to Advil.
Finally, some good news in China today as the World Health Organization has lifted its SARS travel advisory on Beijing. And as Far East correspondent Celia Hatton tells us, residents are hoping now for a quick return to normal for business and tourism.
The WHO Regional Director for the Western Pacific, Dr. Shigeru Omi, said that he felt that the risk to travelers to Beijing was now minimal. Beijing has also been removed from a list of places with local transmissions of the disease. There are now just 43 people in hospital with SARS in China's capital, down from more than 1,000 people in May. Many places that were closed during the outbreak, including restaurants, movie theaters, and gymnasiums, have now begun to reopen their doors, although business remains slow for many. Some control measures will remain in place, though. Beijing authorities plan to continue checking travelers at airports and train stations for signs of fever. Celia Hatton, Beijing.
And I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Think of your favorite child. Now think of your favorite child again in your car. What can you do to ensure that child will live to become a favorite adult? When I come back, I'll tell you.
Doug is frugal.
Well, money doesn't grow on trees, you know.
The problem is Doug is about to buy a used car.
Yep, and I'm going to get ripped off!
And Doug doesn't know about Carfax, which lets you check a used car's history to see if it's been in an accident, has accurate mileage, stuff like that. So you know your money's well spent.
So I might save thousands?
Exactly, Doug. Just go to CARFAX.com or ask your dealer for a Carfax vehicle history report.
Hey, how about we go halvesies on the car?
How about nunsies?
How about sumsies?
No. Carfax, the truth about used cars.
How do you protect your most precious cargo? Safety seats, which reduce infant death risk by 69% and toddler by 47%. Infant seats from birth to 1 year should be installed rear-facing in the back seat. These often convert to front-facing for toddlers under 4 years and 40 pounds. Booster seats are suitable for children 4 to 8. But not until a child is over 80 pounds and 8 years old are regular seat belts proper restraints. Whatever their age, when you think of your favorite children, picture them buckled up, then do it. I'm Bobby Likas. Like us, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome to our program, speaking to you on the IE America Radio Network on terrestrial radio stations from the West Coast to the East, broadcasting from the depths of outer space on the Sirius radio satellite covering North and Central America, from Alaska to the equator, and streaming audio on the Internet with listeners all across the world. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Has the food industry's corruption of politics put Americans at risk? It's really extraordinary what's going on with this. A couple of days ago, we saw this thing from workingforchange.com, where the corporate lobbyists continue to have their way with the Illinois state legislature, it may become as difficult to find out the skinny on factory farming as it's been to ferret out the truth of the Jenin refugee camp invasion or discover how many innocent civilians were killed in Afghanistan. The Illinois House took one step toward that goal by passing House Bill 5793 by an 118-0 vote. Legislators passed a bill making it illegal to photograph animals on factory farms without the consent of their owners. And then we go back to the Bush school lunch proposal back in April 5th. This was the year before last. President Bush's proposal to reject a Clinton administration requirement that all beef served to children in the school lunch program be tested for salmonella. Numerous companies and industry groups that were benefit from the proposal not only contributed heavily to Bush's presidential campaign, but their executives assumed key roles on the president's transition team. And now we have the sugar industry threatening the World Health Organization. And on it goes. It's getting wild out there, folks, with the cons, the conservatives, and their association with these large food producers and what they're doing, not just with our food supply, but with our information supply and with our government, our governance, our mechanism of governance. Has the food industry corruption of politics put Americans at risk? Marion Nessel, I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly, she'll correct me, author of Food Politics, has been professor and chair of the Department of Nutrition and Food Studies at New York University since 1988. She taught nutrition at Brandeis University and from 1976 to 86 was associate dean at the University of California, San Francisco School of Medicine. She served as managing editor of the 1988 Surgeon General's Report on Nutrition and Health. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program, Dr. Nessel.
It's a pleasure to be here. I wish you could turn up the volume a little bit. This feels like a hearing test.
Oh, my. Okay. Well, hopefully our board operator there heard the message and can do something about that. Is it Nestle or Nestle?
It's Nestle. You got it
Nestle,
right.
Nestle, great. Okay, great. And you've written a book called Food Politics, How the Food Industry Influences Nutrition and Health. What prompted you to write this book?
Well, exactly the kinds of things that you were just talking about. No one in my field was talking about them, and I think of it as the elephant under the carpet. There was this huge monster in the room, and nobody was talking about it. Everyone was talking about the astonishing increase in levels of overweight and obesity in this country, as if this were strictly a matter of personal responsibility and had nothing to do with the situation or the environment that we find ourselves in. And when I was in government, working for the government, I was just astonished by the amount of clout that these food corporations had when they were so anxious to make sure that no federal agency or no nutritionist, for that matter, ever suggested anything about eating less of their products, regardless of what the product was.
Can you give us an example of that?
Well, I guess the best example is the most recent one, the one you just mentioned, where the sugar lobbying groups are asking the United States government to withdraw funding from the World Health Organization, the organization that has done such a splendid job of stopping the SARS epidemic, because they published a report on dietary guidelines a couple of months ago that suggested that people not eat more than 10% of their calories from added sugars. 10% of calories from sugars is about 2 ounces of sugar a day. Spartan rations. And yeah, the sugar lobbies were so upset about this that they've lobbied governments, gotten the ambassadors of dozens of countries to complain to the World Health Organization, and then asked the United States government to intervene and withdraw funding. That's quite astonishing. What's changed? I mean, the lobbies have always been involved in this. What's changed recently is the explicitness and the overtness of what they're doing. All of this used to be hidden. When I started writing Food Politics 4 years ago, it was really difficult for me to get this kind of information because it was buried, it was hidden, it was behind closed doors. Now it's out in the open.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the whole, it's amazing how, particularly with this administration, for the first time in my recollection, and I've been on this planet more than 50 years, and I've been paying attention to politics for much of that, and this is the first time I've seen an administration that just brazenly says, we are catering to a special interest, to those special interest groups that give us money, period.
And we don't care what happens to the public.
Right.
We don't care what happens to public health. We don't care how many fat kids there are. We don't care if the industry is marketing to children. We don't care if the industry is lobbying. We don't care if every single food safety measure that would protect the public gets defeated by some lobbying group. It's amazing.
Yeah. It is remarkable. Now in our chat room, there's some folks are talking about this issue. And by the way, if any of our listeners want to get to that, just go to tomhartman.com, click through to the radio show page, and then click the chat button. And when you get to the trade forum, click on the chat button. And one of the comments was made: these people don't care about our children. They don't care, you know. I've worked with people in a variety of industries that are not what you would call the best industries. I don't know how to say it beyond that. And from back years ago, I used to run an advertising agency. And there were some accounts that we wouldn't take, but nonetheless, there are a lot of companies out there that are just in it for the money, and everybody's upfront about it. But I don't think I've ever met anybody in business who, and maybe it's just, maybe I'm naive, but I don't think that I've ever met anybody who at night can look themselves in the mirror before they go to sleep and say that during the day they did things to harm people. There's always some rationalization of there's a greater good or there's some positive purpose or the other side is misguided. What is the story that these people on
well, I actually
are
see a lot
telling
of
themselves?
I mean, what I'm seeing is finger pointing. It's not our fault. We're just giving the public what the public wants. And this is a matter of personal responsibility anyway. If you people just had character and just said no, there wouldn't be a problem. We're just doing what the public wants.
Well, what about that argument?
Well, it's a complicated argument because one of the great things about being an adult is you get to eat whatever you want. You know, nobody can tell you to finish your peas before you leave the table. And so there's some merit in that, but it's as if the people are making personal choices in a vacuum. They're not making personal choices in a vacuum. We are influenced by $33 billion a year in advertising for food and beverages alone, and that advertising is targeted to us in ways that we just don't notice. We're not supposed to notice it. To the extent that the advertising is successful, it slips in below our consciousness and appeals to our belief that we make decisions that are completely independent of outside influences. I mean, it's really quite skillfully done. And once you start noticing it, you begin to see the ways in which it's done. So the personal, and it isn't just the advertising. The things that are really encouraging people to eat more now are more subtle than that. It's convenience. It's having food available within arm's reach at all times. It's ubiquity, having food available everywhere. Look at where food is sold now. In New York, you can buy food in shoe stores, in bookstores, in clothing stores. Any place you go, food is available. That's a eat more message, and it encourages people to eat more. Larger portions encourage people to eat more, and cheap food encourages people to eat more.
And is all-you-can-eat buffets that are proliferating.
Exactly, all of those kinds of things. Yeah. And all of those are influenced by government policy. One of the things that the personal responsibility people argue is that they don't want government involved in personal choice. But, of course, the government is already involved up to its ears in the kinds of food supply that we have and the way in which our food supply is purchased, traded, and supported and priced. All of those things are affected by government policies. And, you know, from a nutritionist standpoint, I'd like to see some of those policies tweaked. We don't even have to, in order to encourage people to eat more healthfully.
Yeah, the folks on the other side, though, I think would say, well, let's get government out altogether, that the government involvement is creating these kind of dislocations. And
no, I don't think that's what they would say. They would say keep government involved the way it is now because that protects us. Don't make any changes in what government is doing. I think it's a complete fallacy to think that the government is not involved in food choice now. It is.
Right.
It's involved in farm supports, which lower the price of foods that have cheap sweeteners and cheap fats in them.
Particularly corn.
You know, corn sweeteners and the oils that come from soybeans, for example. It's involved in pricing sugar so that it encourages keeping the price of sugar high, that's sucrose high, so that companies will use corn sweeteners instead. It's involved in business rules that allow companies to deduct the cost of advertising from business expense, even when that advertising is directed towards small children.
It
allows advertising on television during children's television hours, and it allows marketing in schools.
Yes, we're speaking with Marion Nessel, who is the author of Food Politics, a book about the subtitle, in fact, is How the Food Industry Influences Nutrition and Health. Marion, is there a website that people can go to find out more information?
Yes, there is. It's www.foodpolitics.com.
Foodpolitics.com.
And what I put on that is information, is kind of reviews and commentary about the books. I have the letter from the Sugar Association threatening to sue me. I put all of that kind of thing on there.
That's great. I'd like to get into this a little further with you if you have the time.
Sure.
You mentioned an experience that you had with the meat industry. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I'm not sure which experience you're referring to exactly, but when I was working on the Surgeon General's report on nutrition and health, I was asked to speak to a group of the heads of meat lobbying firms or meat trade associations and to tell them about the Surgeon General's report on nutrition and health. And I had been told on the first day on my job work doing that report, that no matter what happened, the report would never say eat less meat, because that would be politically impossible to do. Instead,
Marianne, may I interrupt you, please? Can you hold that thought? We've got a commercial break here, but I want to finish this story. It's a great one. This is Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. Stay tuned. We'll be right back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
You know, you ought to check your credit report.
But I just don't have time.
I have to clean out the garage.
And take the kids to the doctor.
And balance my checkbook.
And take the dog to the vet.
And mow the lawn.
And do the grocery shopping. And call the bank.
Stop. If you haven't checked your credit report, there's a fast, easy solution. Log on to freecreditreport.com and we'll show you how to find out online what's in your credit report. And get 30 days of our credit check monitoring service free. So don't say,
I'm just too busy.
Log on to freecreditreport.com today.
Summer's here, and we can't think of a better way to kick it off than with a new car and an extra $4,000 in your pocket. Because right now, General Motors is offering $4,000 cash back on every 2003 Chevy Cavalier, S10, Tracker, and Avalanche, Pontiac Sunfire, Grand Prix, and four-cylinder Grand Am, Old Silhouette, Buick LeSabre, and GMC Sonoma. Or qualified buyers can choose 0% APR financing for 5 years. You can't beat it. So if you've been putting off buying a car or truck, don't wait any longer. GM's making it easy for just about anybody who needs a car or truck to buy one. $4,000 back or 0% APR from the Great American Car Company. Now through July 7th, just in time for summer. You know there's a car or truck that's right for you. Come find it. Monthly payment is $16.67 for every $1,000 you finance. Example down payment approximately 12%. Some customers will not qualify. Take delivery by 7703. See dealer for details.
Attention all plaintiffs. Personal injury, negligence, premises liability, medical malpractice, product liability, commercial cases. Receive up to $50,000 instant cash assistance. Call now, 800-586-5493. Get cash now on your pending lawsuit. No risk, no payments. We only collect when your case is settled. Call 800-586-5493. Express Lawsuit Funding can help you. 800-586-5493.
Sherwood Baylert is a member of Congress and, despite that, not a bad guy. He's a New York Republican who's been in the House for more than 20 years, and he loves the place. Fine. It's said that some people who muck manure for a living come to love the smell, so everyone to their own taste. But I thought Sherwood had been sniffing the congressional perfumes a bit too deeply when he recently declared that the House is, quote, the one institution in the whole wide world that's the personification of this great democracy of ours. Democracy? The great majority of Americans are factory workers, clerks, cab drivers, dirt farmers, teachers, Main Street merchants, programmers, waitresses, health care workers, and the like. How many of them serve in Congress, or are even marginally represented by those who serve there? About 70% of Americans make less than $50,000 a year. How many of our Congress critters go to Washington from such an income perspective? Indeed, the U.S. Public Interest Research Group reports that nearly half of the newly elected members of Congress are millionaires, which 99.5% of Americans are not. And if the House is so representative of our people, why didn't we get a pay raise 4 of the last 5 years as they gave themselves? Why don't we have top-flight health coverage paid for by taxpayers as they do? Why don't we get golden no-worry pensions as they do? Phil Graham is one example of congressional apartness from the rest of America. The Texas senator, who just retired, opposed any government program to help regular folks while he slavishly served the corporate powers that financed his elections. He became a millionaire while in office. And now that he's out, we the people will send him a retirement check of $78,534 every year. He'll get more doing nothing than 80% of us will make working day in and day out. This is Jim Hightower saying, that's the personification of plutocracy, not of democracy.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
We are the world. We are the children. We are the ones who make a right.
Welcome back to the program. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with Marion Nessel, the author of Food Politics, How the Food Industry Influences Nutrition and Health. And Marion, you were telling us the story about the working on the Surgeon General's report and getting up to the point where you were going to be commenting on how much meat people should be eating.
Yeah, this is now ancient history because this took place in 1986. But when I started working on the Surgeon General's report, I was told the first day on the job that it could never say eat less meat, because if it did, the Department of Agriculture would object and lobbyists would be involved and Congress would make sure that the report never came out. This was, after all, during the Reagan administration.
But what about the truth?
And that, well, that had nothing to do with the truth. We instead we would use euphemisms that everyone would understand as a code for eat less meat, like choose lean meats, which is kind of an oxymoron. And so, you know, that was kind of my introduction to that job. And during the, I thought, well, maybe they're just being paranoid. But during the period that I worked on the report, it was clear that they were anything but paranoid. Every single lobbyist representing any food or food product or commodity that might be affected by the report came in and met with staff in the office that I was working in. I wasn't directly involved in most of those meetings, but I knew that they were taking place. And so we were very, very careful about the wording of recommendations. And at one point, I actually met with the directors of several of these trade associations, and it was an extremely tense and uncomfortable meeting until I finally told them, okay, folks, this report is not going to say eat less meat, and then everybody relaxed. They were perfectly happy to have the report say eat less fat. As long as meat wasn't singled out.
Right, because there's not a big fat industry.
And so that we see that. We see that with meat. We see that with dairy products. We see it with salt and sugar. In fact, any food product that is a source of the kinds of things that you really ought to be eating less of if you're worried about your weight or health has a lobbyist in Washington to make sure that no federal agency ever says anything about that. And if you look on the website of federal agencies today, obesity and overweight are the single most important public health nutrition problem that we're facing in this country today, and it's a problem of staggering proportions because it raises the risk for so many different diseases. And yet, and there are two sides to the obesity equation. There's an activity side and a food side, but you can't lose weight very easily unless you eat less. And if you go on the website of any government agency involved in advising the public about obesity, you won't see anything about eating less. There's quite a bit about moving more. And mind you, I'm in favor of people being more active. But I think that we really have to watch what we're eating if we're going to lose weight.
Right. What do you think is the solution to... I mean, clearly there are health solutions to the health issues that you're bringing up, but in the minute and a half or so that we have left in this segment, I'm wondering, what do you think is the solution to this problem of government being subservient to industry?
Well, there are a number of solutions. One is education. One is taking political action. One is taking legal action, and one is trying to get legislation. I mean, what we're talking about here is democracy. And we're talking about democracy in action. If people want to change the system, they have to use the political system for their own purposes, for the benefit
happening?
Of the public and not just the benefit of corporations.
Do you see any advocates out there for this?
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of advocates. Certainly Center for Science and the Public Interest in Washington, D.C.
No, I mean elected officials.
Oh, elected officials. There are a group of officials in Washington who are working on these issues now, and certainly in state legislatures. There are states all over the country that are examining marketing practices in schools.
Great.
And
great. Thank you.
Everybody should do it locally.
I agree. Marion Nessel, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
I appreciate your joining us. Food Politics, How the Food Industry Influences Nutrition and Health. Foodpolitics.com is the website. Here in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
As the unemployment rate in Iraq continues to worsen, and where by some estimates nearly half the country's populace is already jobless, those without work are running out of patience. More than 15,000 people have joined a new Iraqi union called the Union of the Unemployed in Iraq, or UUI, and it's been in negotiations with U.S. civil administration officials over the last 3 weeks, hoping to win jobs or unemployment insurance payments from the new ruling coalition. But the union says talks have stalled. Now they're organizing nationwide protests for July 3rd, which some in the UUI expect could draw well more than 100,000 people.
Need a job? Go directly to jail. City officials in Taunton, Massachusetts have taken a novel approach to tackle a budget deficit. Lay off the city's unionized municipal employees and replace them with shackled prisoners. Taunton city councilors hope the chain gangs will help them replace 50 workers and cut into $3 million of red ink, but Laborers Union Local 1144 has vowed to put a halt to the plan. The union says the practice is not only disgusting, but a violation of its existing contract, which prohibits the city from accepting so-called volunteer labor during a time of layoffs.
Sources within the British Fire Brigades Union say the government may have spied on union members during the nine-month contract dispute, which ended earlier this month. According to the Manchester Guardian newspaper, union officials took great pains to keep their internal communications secure, even going so far as to buy new mobile phones, whose functions were disabled to restrict their ability to call only other phones in the group. Even so, government negotiators always seem to know what the union members were discussing. The FBU says it doesn't have enough evidence to request a formal investigation into the matter, but it's still working to build its case.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, taking your calls, talking to celebrities like Raven Simone from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Doolittle movies. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have two chinchillas and I have a big Briard.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out. So he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Charisse Doolittle, to talk to the animals. You don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All the need is love.
Animal Talk on the IE America Radio Network.
Hello, this is Andy Dave Rush inviting you to join the fun on Home Improvement USA. Great guests and experts offer home improvement advice and keep us updated on new products and technologies. On Home Improvement USA, we give away terrific prizes to all our callers. Join me, Handy Dave, along with Ken Walchek on location at Clark Devon Hardware in Chicago and engineer and handyman Jay Brentlinger for Home Improvement USA. 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 Pacific on Saturday. Don't miss it, Home Improvement USA.
We broadcast it on Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific on IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Tell it all, brother, before we fall. Tell it all, brothers and sisters. Tell it all. How much you're holding back on me.
Welcome to the vast, radical, middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. You know, I say that because the words right and left have been so corrupted. Just so terribly, terribly corrupted. And, for example, I've got an email here from Joel in Sherman, Texas. JD in Sherman, Texas. He says, oh, and by the way, if you'd like to be on the program today, the number is 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 825-5937. And our quote for the day is about corporations from Civis Mundi. Corporations are charters granted by our government to profit under, not to rule from. So anyhow, J.D. in Sherman, Texas writes, as for definitions of the words liberal and conservative, I generally subscribe to the classical definitions of the ones found in Webster's, but I am disturbed as to how these words are misused. I am a factory worker, and many of my coworkers believe liberal is a bad word. Weak on defense, pro-welfare, pro-affirmative action, pro-women's lib, pro-gay rights, pro-abortion, pro-big government, etc. Not sure that all those things are necessarily bad, but anyhow, so some go so far as to associate liberalism with socialism or communism. On the other hand, they say conservative is good. Patriotic, macho, independent, high morals, strong on defense, family values. They do not see conservatives as anti-labor or for big corporations. And says, I like the classical definitions found in Webster's. So I went to the Merriam-Webster Dictionary. Conservatism, the principles and policies of a conservative party, a disposition in politics to preserve what is established. Political philosophy based on tradition and social stability, stressing established institutions and preferring gradual development to abrupt change. The tendency to prefer an existing or traditional situation to change. So I don't see how you could say that a president who goes charging off to war against another nation or who creates the biggest budget deficit in the history of the United States is a conservative. Those seem very aggressive, non-conservative actions. Those, among others, you know, slashing clean air legislation and calling it the Clear Skies Initiative, and slashing protections in our food supply for our children and calling that food safety. These are not things that are conservative, in my opinion. Now, liberal, what does liberal mean? You look in the dictionary. Liberal, favoring or based upon the principles of liberalism, or constituting a political party advocating or associated with the principles of political liberalism, especially of a political party. Greater individual participation in government and constitutional, political, and administrative reforms designed to secure these objectives. Then, of course, there are other meanings for the word liberal, you know, stresses warm-hearted readiness to give in size and things like that. But bottom line, according to the dictionary, liberal means get individuals involved in government, and conservative means don't change things. Or don't do it too quickly. So, you know, what? But that's not what these words have come to mean. So I prefer to say I think that the vast majority of Americans know where they're at, know what they believe in, know what they want, and aren't really comfortable with all these labels. I suppose you could say that I'm a liberal, but I'm going to call it the radical middle, because I really believe that the place that I'm coming from here is the place that the majority of Americans are, which is that we want democracy. We want a government of, by, and for we the people, not they the transnational corporations. This is the fundamental issue that we are facing right now. We have an administration that is of, by, and for large multinational corporations. It's all made up of CEOs. The least wealthy multimillionaire in the Bush cabinet is Condoleezza Rice, and she has an oil tanker named after her. She's a millionaire also, of course, but the least of the millionaires. And this is you know, what has happened to statespeople, or statesmen they used to call them, to people who really and truly care about what they're doing in the context of for the nation rather than simply for the group that's going to give them the next big political contribution. But we were talking about this food stuff here with Marianne Nessel, and I'd like to just wrap up some of the stats on that before we move along. President Bush's proposal to reject a Clinton administration requirement that all beef served to children in the school lunch program be tested for salmonella and instead be irradiated is the latest in a series of moves intended to weaken consumer protection laws for the benefit of his corporate supporters, according to Public Citizen. Our question, has the food industry's corruption of politics put Americans at risk? Numerous companies and industry groups, goes on this the report, that would benefit from the proposal not only contributed heavily to Bush's presidential campaign, but their executives assumed key roles in the president's transition team. Public Citizen President Joan Claybrook says, this proposal is nothing more than a payback to corporations that contributed to President Bush's campaign, which was the most expensive campaign in history. The president has no shame. On Wednesday, the U.S. Department of Agriculture announced a proposal This is from a year ago, to abandon the Clinton administration policy to conduct bacterial testing of meat served as part of the USDA's National School Lunch Program. The Food Marketing Institute gave $739,567 to the Republican Party last year. And the Food Marketing Institute's president and CEO, Timothy Hammond, served on Bush's Agriculture Transition Advisory Team, personally donated the maximum to the president's campaign. Hammond was also a member of the Bush Pioneers, people responsible for raising more than $100,000 for his campaign. Hammonds and FMI actively oppose certain measures to test meat-free E. coli. The Grocery Manufacturers of America gave $242,925 to the Republican Party and GOP candidates last year. GMA President Manly Mobus served on Bush's Agricultural Advisory Transition Team and personally donated the maximum allowable to Bush's presidential campaign. And on it goes. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association gave $389,170 to the Republican Party and GOP candidates last year. NCBA Vice President Chandler Keyes served on Bush's Agricultural Advisory Team. It goes, and you say, well, they're giving money to the Democrats, too, aren't they? Well, for example, the IBP, the Iowa Beef Packers, gave $126,000 to politicians, $121,000 of it to Republicans, $4,000 to Democrats. The Food Marketing Institute, the first group I mentioned, gave $795,000 to politicians. This was in the 2000 election. $739,576 went to Republicans and only $55,000 to Democrats. So it is quite lopsided. The cattle feeding and ranching industry, $25,250 to Republicans, zero to Democrats. If you'd like to be on the program today, 1-800-TALK-YES is the number, 1-800-825-5937. And Ben in Elgin, Illinois, has a comment for us. Welcome to the program, Ben.
Thank you. I'm also the webmaster of WhiteRoseSociety.org.
Oh, where, great. That is a marvelous site.
And after today, people will find your program on that site.
Well, thank you, Ben. Thanks
You're
for that
welcome.
Update. And I've had a lot of, actually, emails and requests for archives of the show, so this will be great.
Now, there's a real problem with political labels that I've got, and that is, you know, I'm a politically aware person. I think I've been politically aware since about 1970 when I was in the sixth grade and I started, you know, researching nuclear disarmament and tried to convince my folks to build a fallout shelter in the basement. And I have a hard time applying a political label to myself anymore. You know, am I a conservative? Well, yes, in some things I guess I really am a conservative. I don't want to see the Constitution of the United States changed.
Right, me too. I don't want to see the government just spending in deficit. I think that, you know, we're spending as much on interest as we're spending more on interest on our national debt than we are on all of our social programs combined.
Correct.
And that's, you know, that's nuts. That's what Barry Goldwater warned us about.
Exactly right. And I don't want to see our Constitution changed. I don't want to see things done that promote, you know, irresponsibility among people. Okay, I don't want to see, you know, I don't want to see government programs that do help people structured in such a way as to be the enabler in a dysfunctional
right.
relationship,
fostering dependency.
Correct, but I do think the government needs to both help people and use its good offices to foster help towards people.
I agree.
So, but you know, but in terms of liberty, you know, liberty issues. 100% of the time, I find myself agreeing with the Libertarian Party.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of issues of, you know, should people be helped? Should people, you know, by government? You know, is it necessary to have government programs to help some categories of people who cannot help themselves? Yeah, definitely.
Well, the Libertarians would say no.
That's right. So in that case, you know, I wind up moving over into the Democratic side of things, and in fact, sometimes to the radical Democratic side of things, because I think that health care is one of those things that is not optional.
Yeah, I agree. And in fact, in our next hour, we're going to have a guest from the head of the Ayn Rand Institute, which is the philosophical foundation of the libertarian group.
Oh, I was an objectivist many years ago before I thought things through a little better.
Well, we're going to have the head objectivist for the planet on in the next hour. We're going to be talking about should corporations be considered persons under the law. So that should be an interesting conversation. But Ben, I am so with you on this that it is so hard, you know, for most people, frankly, and that's why I came up with this radical middle thing, to say, yeah, I'm a liberal or, yeah, I'm a conservative, because on the one hand, there aren't nice, neat little boundaries. And on the other hand, the particularly, you know, the Fox News crowd have turned the word liberal into something that even liberals would not agree with. And
yeah,
it's become a swear word.
My voting choices are sort of strange. When I see a race in which the outcome is all but decided, I will vote libertarian.
Yeah.
If I see a race in which I think I can make a difference, 99% of the time, I will vote Democratic.
Yeah.
And yep. That 0.1% of the time is when I see a Republican public servant who isn't both a thug and a fascist.
Yeah. Here in Vermont, the libertarians are pretty non-existent, but we've got the Progressive Party.
Right.
And, you know, there's the Green Party around. So a lot of good stuff. Good food for thought, Ben. Thank you for calling in and sharing that. I appreciate you being on the program. The sugar industry, let's just to wrap up this stuff, I did want to share this information with you. This is mind-boggling. And Ben, thanks for calling 1-800-TALK. Yes, the sugar industry in the United States, this from The Guardian in the United Kingdom. So they're looking at what's going on here and reporting on the stuff that we're just not finding much about. Marion Nestle mentioned this. The sugar industry in the U.S. is threatening to bring the World Health Organization to its knees by demanding that Congress end its funding unless the WHO scraps guidelines on healthy eating due to be published on Wednesday. It'll be interesting to see what happens when these things come out tomorrow. The threat is being described by WHO insiders as tantamount to blackmail and worse than any pressure exerted by the tobacco lobby. This from the article, Sugar Industry Threatens to Scupper WHO by Sarah Bosley in the April 21st Guardian UK. Oh, April. Oh, this is some time back. I'm going to have to do a little more research on this and find out what the status of this is right now. The industry is furious at the guidelines, they say, which say that sugar should account for no more than 10% of a healthy diet. And the association, together with six big food industry groups, has also written to the U.S. Health Secretary Tommy Thompson, asking him to use his influence to get the WHO report withdrawn. This coalition, this consumer interest group, includes the U.S. Council for International Business, comprising more than 300 companies, including Coca-Cola and PepsiCo. Professor Philip James, the British chairman of the International Obesity Task Force, who wrote the WHO's previous report on diet and nutrition in 1990, says these strong-arm tactics are nothing new. As The Guardian says, the day after his expert committee had decided on a 10% limit, the World Sugar Organization, quote, went into overdrive, he said. Quote, 40 ambassadors wrote to the WHO insisting our report should be removed on the grounds that it would do irreparable damage to countries in the developing world. The developing world, the fact that sugar should be not more than 10% of your diet is going to harm people. Professor James was called in by the American Embassy in Geneva to, quote, explain to them why they were suddenly getting an enormous amount of pressure from the State Department to have our report retracted, end quote. The sugar industry, he discovered, had hired one of Washington's top lobbying companies. Since his 1990 report, the International Life Sciences Institute, now doesn't that sound nice? International Life Sciences Institute, good, credible organization that really cares about your nutrition, you would think, founded by Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola, General Foods, Kraft, and Procter & Gamble, has also gained accreditation to the WHO and the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization. It's like they're a country. The Washington-based National Soft Drink Association suggests that 25% of our dietary calories should be coming from sugar. Some interesting facts here on the fast food industry. In a survey of 9- and 10-year-olds, this from Nader's group, half of them said they thought that Ronald McDonald knew best what kids should eat. Every month, 90% of the children between 3 and 9 in America visit McDonald's. Now, you know, on the one hand, I say, hey, you know, a business is successful. Good on them. They should, you know, that's the goal of a business. But on the other hand, we, as Marion Nestle pointed out, when billions, $30 billion a year is spent in advertising to convince people that what's bad for you is good for you, and then any attempt on the part of the government to set the record straight is squashed by industry, and those in our government who are taking these huge, what I would call, what would have been called legally, right up through from the founding of this country up until the 1890s would have been called bribes, and people would have gone to jail for, with these politicians taking these huge amounts, hundreds of thousands, millions, tens of millions of dollars from these corporations to ensure that the government agencies set up to protect us and inform us don't do that. I mean, what has happened? Ray Kroc, the founder of McDonald's, said, and I quote, "We have found that we cannot trust some people who are nonconformists. We will make conformists out of them in a hurry. The organization cannot trust the individual. The individual must trust the organization." End quote. Ray Kroc, good Republican. Hundreds of millions of dollars of government subsidies for training, by the way, go to McDonald's. Do you know that that if you're a fast food franchise and you hire minimum wage people and employ them for 400 hours, you get a $2,400 subsidy from the government. That's $6 an hour. The government pays fast food companies to hire people that they pay $6 an hour to. We, with our tax dollars, are paying the wages of the fast food industry. Get out to vote today on MoveOn.org. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Mom, what's wrong?
My knees are killing me. I shouldn't have jogged this morning.
Today's my party. You gonna be okay?
I should be. The party's hours away.
And we have tons to do.
The moment of choice, Tylenol or Advil. Which works better to get you through the day? Truth is, Advil can give you longer-lasting relief, better relief than Tylenol for tough muscle aches and pain. And Advil is gentle on your stomach.
Mom, you look like you're having fun.
I really am.
For better relief, advance to Advil.
Summer's here, and we can't think of a better way to kick it off than with a new car and an extra $4,000 in your pocket. Because right now, General Motors is offering $4,000 cash back on every 2003 Chevy Cavalier, S10, Tracker, and Avalanche, Pontiac, Sunfire, Grand Prix, and four-cylinder Grand Am, Old Silhouette, Buick LeSabre, and GMC Sonoma. Or qualified buyers can choose 0% APR financing for 5 years. You can't beat it. So if you've been putting off buying a car or truck, don't wait any longer. GM's making it easy for just about anybody who needs a car or truck to buy one. $4,000 back or 0% APR from the Great American Car Company. Now through July 7th, just in time for summer. You know there's a car or truck that's right for you. Come find it. Monthly payment is $16.67 for every $1,000 you finance. Example down payment approximately 12%. Some customers will not qualify. Take delivery by 7703. See dealer for details.
Hey, Steve.
Yeah?
I'm taking Nicorette like you said, but right now, I really need a cigarette. And according to my schedule, I'm not supposed to take another piece for 2 hours, so what should I do? And don't tell me to tough it out, because it's not going to be pretty.
Take an extra piece?
Good idea.
When a really tough craving hits, just take an extra piece of Nicorette. As soon as you bite down, it delivers the medicine you need. Nicorette helps you quit one craving at a time. Use as directed. Follow dosing schedule. Individual results may vary. Support program can improve success rate.
I would like to see a law that says you, your organs automatically get donated unless you say no.
All right, Richie, have you got an organ donor specification?
No.
Why?
Because I don't want them taking me before I'm dead.
In Richie's case, what good would most of those organs be?
Certainly won't be going for his brain. Or they might, because it's never been used.
You might as well be dead. Your brain is, so why not the rest of you?
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, your animalological super information highway, helping you with your pets. Every Sunday night, we take your calls, help your pets, always give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like from It Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, on the IE America Radio Network.
The Mike Molloy Show.
Joining us now is Jason Campbell with the Christian Action Network.
Well, since 1991, the gay movement has gone down to Disney to do these gay days. You've had events where you've had Mickey Mouse with Goofy in sexual positions.
Ah!
Homosexual movies are shown on the Disney transportation systems. And what kind of movies, for God's sake, do they show on these buses?
Triple X.
Oh, you're kidding.
If a child's riding beside one of the buses and looks up and says, Daddy, what is that on the television monitor?
Right.
It's going to be an embarrassing moment.
Oh, it'll be worse than embarrassing. The child will be scarred for life.
Right. That's what the homosexuals want.
Well, I know. They're after the kid. Now, the only thing I'm afraid of is somebody just tuned in the program and never heard the program before and just went, oh, Jesus, this guy is really a right-wing freak.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Keep rolling along. This is the Tom Hartman radio program, rolling along on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting all across the United States and on the Sirius satellite. If you have a Ford, Chrysler, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Mazda, Land Rover, Dodge, Jeep, Mini, Volkswagen, Audi, Nissan, Infiniti, or Jaguar automobile, you can pop an antenna on it and get the station. And, of course, we're on land-based radio stations all over the country. And also broadcasting on the Internet, IEAmericaRadio.com and RadioPower.org, and the shows will be archived on WhiteRoseSociety.org. In 1991, only four states, now 1991, that was 12 years ago, only four states had obesity rates of 15% or higher. Only four. Today, 37 states. Marine in Shaland, Washington, I believe. Correct me if I'm pronouncing it wrong. Welcome to the program. You call 1-800-TALK-YES. Thanks for calling. Maureen? Yeah. Either Maureen isn't there or she's there. Okay, Maureen, welcome to the program. I still can't hear you. I guess she's not there. Okay. All righty. We can't hear you, Maureen. I'm sorry. You might want to try calling back. We'll pick up the call in the next hour. The annual health costs to America stemming from obesity are $240 billion, which, oddly, is exactly double the revenue of the fast food industry. So we're spending twice as much money providing health care to people who are consuming the products of this industry and getting sick as a result of it. And now, again, you know, this raises the question, well, should we tax them? Should we control them? Should we change? Or should government just butt out? But then you get this issue of, okay, if government butts out, who butts in? You know, you've got this huge vacuum that happens when government gets out of the way and corporations leap into the fray. And then you're back to a form of feudalism. Between 1984 and 1993, 9-year period, the number of fast food restaurants doubled in Great Britain. Over the same period, that same 9-year period, after obesity rates being relatively steady for 1,000 years, over that same 9-year period, obesity doubled in Great Britain, 1984 and 1993. And now we have the situation where the U.S. Is producing enough fruit and vegetables. And as I know Stan in Birmingham's on the line, but we've got just 30 seconds or so left here on the show, Stan. So if you could call back in the next hour, I'd appreciate it, and we'll pick up your call then. 13 states have now instituted food libel laws. A South Dakota law specifically prevents people from saying that generally accepted agricultural practices, such as the use of pesticides, might make food unsafe. All sorts of strange stuff happening here.
on the radio, the internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
Why don't I take something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
You know, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. Officials say firefighters are making slow but steady progress on the raging Aspen wildfire near Tucson, Arizona. But Fire Information Officer Sharon Brown today said that progress comes at a cost.
Fire has grown to 19,500 acres. Containment is at 15%. The cost of the fire is now $3.6 million.
Brown says the fire itself, as well as backburns set by nearly 1,000 firefighters, have spewed a lot of smoke into the air. And while that is causing concern for surrounding towns, most are not in any danger. The community of Oracle is still in the line of fire, however, but officials say it's not being directly threatened so far. British Foreign Secretary Jack Straw has now started presenting evidence to a board of inquiry into the government's reasons for committing its troops to Iraq. The committee is examining claims about Iraq's weapons of mass destruction, in particular claims made by the British government Saddam Hussein could activate chemical and biological weapons in as little as 45 minutes. Straw, though, insists the whole issue has been exaggerated.
I don't happen to regard the 45-minute statement as having the significance which has been attached to it. And neither does anybody else, indeed nobody round this table, if I say so with respect. It was scarcely mentioned in any of the very large number of debates that took place in the House, evidence to the Foreign Affairs Committee, all the times I was questioned on the radio and television.
The inquiry is also focusing on two dossiers produced by the British government on Iraq's weapons of mass destruction, including one of which had pages duplicated from an American's student thesis. Straw's most senior government minister, who will testify before the inquiry. Officials, meanwhile, say six British troops were killed in Iraq today and several others wounded in several attacks. A spokesman for Prime Minister Tony Blair's office said the first attack happened near the city of Amara, which is about 120 miles south of Basra. Second attack, he said, involved paratroopers who were on patrol when they were attacked. One soldier was wounded. Two vehicles were also destroyed. Helicopter reinforcements were then set in, and they were attacked as they landed, leaving several more soldiers injured.
This is Dr. Danny. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Dr. Danny.
Hey.
Man, listen, we're having a hard time potty training our son.
Well, that's a common problem. How old is your boy?
He's 26.
Paul, I have some bad news. At this age, potty training will be near impossible.
You kidding me?
No, but Paul, I do have some good news.
All right, man.
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
What's the big news in allergy medicine this season? It's a new name in non-drowsy relief. Allivert. New Allivert starts dissolving the instant it touches your tongue. Without water. So you can take Allivert inside, outside, in your car, wherever you are. Allivert is non-drowsy 24-hour relief in a quick-dissolving tablet. New Allivert. Allergy medicine you can take right when you need it, wherever you are. Allivert. Use as directed.
Federal Reserve policymakers today have kicked off 2 days of meetings. Most analysts predict will end with the announcement of yet another cut in the federal funds rate. The only debate on Wall Street now is if the Fed will opt for a hefty half percentage point cut in the interest rates or a tamer quarter point cut. At its current level of 1.25%, the rate's already at its lowest level in 42 years. General Motors is recalling about 250,000 Saturn L series cars. The exhaust system on the 2000 to 2003 model year vehicles with 2.2-liter engines can fail and result in fires.
Mom, see you later.
Jason? Who else is going to the concert with you?
Anna and Kyle.
So you'll be home?
At 11.
Good. Make sure to call me if anything comes up, okay?
You know I never forget.
I know you don't. Now, about that music.
Yeah, isn't it awesome?
Well,
let your kids be who they are, but know what they're doing. Talk, know, ask. Parents, the anti-drug. For more information, call 1-800-788-2800. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
An independent commission appointed by Congress is now reviewing ways America's military academies handle reported sexual assault cases. Colorado Senator Wayne Allard today testified before Congress, and he called the investigation into the Air Force Academy that wrapped up last week, quote, incomplete. Allard says monitoring daily operations at the academy won't solve the problem.
I just want to have an instrument out here that I can look at and get an idea of what's happening at the academy. And then if there's some aberration in the facts that are coming forward, ask for explanations.
Other witnesses who have testified say the culture at the Air Force Academy has gotten away from stressing loyalty to values. The Academy has installed new regulations since dozens of female cadets came forward to report sexual assault cases that were improperly handled, they felt. The independent commission now has 3 months to evaluate the progress that's being made at both the Air Force and Naval Academies, as well as at West Point. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Your car coughing, sputtering, riding rough? Think your service center has one magic machine that checks everything? Oh, no. One size doesn't fit all. When I come back, I'll give you the scope. The scoop. Hi, I'm Bobby Likas. 10 years ago, I discovered a company with the best fuel injector cleaner, BG Products. Now wait, there's more. To do the job right requires cleaning both the fuel and the air induction systems. The process is called BG Complete Induction System Service. If you want your vehicle to run like new, don't settle for anything less. To find a shop near you to perform this service, go to bgfindtheshop.com. That's bgfindtheshop.com. Just like in a doctor's office, different diagnostic tools are used for different symptoms in service centers. A scope performs an EKG on your car's electrical system and checks engine functions as it runs, just like a patient on a treadmill. A scanner, on the other hand, talks with car's onboard computers and sensors, like getting a patient history. But if your car has new noises, hard steering, bumpy ride, or vibrating brakes, you don't need a machine test. You need a doctor, a qualified, experienced technician. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back to our program. Speaking to you on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting on terrestrial radio stations from coast to coast, from the depths of outer space on the Sirius radio satellite covering North and Central America, and streaming live on the Internet from IEAmericaRadio.com and RadioPower.org. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. In this hour, we're going to ask the question, should corporations be considered persons under the law? And we've got a great guest on, and we'll get to him in just a moment. But first, from the last hour, Maureen had called, and we dropped her just before the end of the hour. We had a technical problem on the board. So, Maureen, I want to let you get in here and have your say, and then we'll move on to our guest. Maureen, let's see, you are in Washington State. Shaylin, Washington, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I appreciate you taking my call. I did have a comment about the political labels.
Right.
As I conceptualize it, the political spectrum is a line drawn. You'd have on the right, you have unregulated, supposedly free market capitalism, privately concentrated ownership and power. On the left, you've got state concentrated power or communism. And in the middle, somewhere, you have some kind of balance of public-private power and ownership. For me, what works a whole lot better is our ideal of democracy is a maximum number of the people participating in decision making and in the ownership of resources. And the other end that we're trying to get away from is dictatorship. The extreme would be one man rule. That I don't think that ever really happens. You always have people that make that possible, but a group, but a small group ruling the majority. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, I don't think that the middle necessarily is where we want to be. But I just thought that was...
Okay. Good point and well taken, Maureen. Okay. Thank you. In fact, we'll explore that right now with our guest and take that a little farther. Maureen, thanks for calling. I appreciate your call. Our guest today is Dr. Yoron Brook. Dr. Brook is the president and executive director of the Ayn Rand Institute. I believe that's Ayn Rand, AYNRAND.org on the Internet. He has published in academic as well as popular publications, taught and lectured extensively in the United States and abroad on issues related to the Middle East conflict, terrorism and American foreign policy, finance and ethics, international finance, banking, and corporate governance. Dr. Brook, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
Oh, I'm pleased to have you here. In an article... Well, before I get into this, let me just set up my understanding of this and then let you take a shot at it. It seemed, my read of history is that when the founders of this country were putting together a constitutional republic, they had this very clear understanding that historically humans in what we call civilization had been ruled by one of three kinds of power. They had either been ruled by warlord kings, they had been ruled by theocrats, who ruled by a claim of divine right, or they had been ruled by the extreme wealthy. That was called feudalism. And that they were going to start a fourth way. They were going to try a fourth system, that being rule by consent of the people. And there's people ruling themselves. And the key to this was that humans would have rights, and that any institution that humans create would have only privileges, and that those privileges would be defined by we, the people, the holders of the rights. And so churches had only privileges. Government itself had only privileges. Corporations had only privileges. Nonprofits had only privileges. The local Moose Club had only privileges. All human institutions had privileges, and the holders of the rights were the humans. And then in 1886, according to John Chandler Bancroft Davis, the court reporter of the U.S. Supreme Court, in the Santa Clara County versus Southern Pacific Railroad case, the Supreme Court, he said, in fact, if you read the decision, the court did not say this, but in the headnote, the court reporter said that the court had said that corporations should have the rights of persons under the 14th Amendment, not churches, not government, not any other form of human association, just corporations. And ever since then, we've seen this wild takeover of our governmental institutions by corporations claiming the First Amendment right to donate money to politics and Fourth Amendment rights of privacy and on and on and on. And I understand from speaking with my producer that you think that that's a good thing, that corporations have rights under the Bill of Rights.
Wow, that was quite an intro.
I know, it's a long rant. I'll give you an equal one.
Yeah. Well, let me disagree with you kind of from the beginning to end, really.
Okay.
There was a fourth form of government that the founders rejected, and rejected explicitly if you read both Madison and Jefferson and I think Washington. And they rejected explicitly the form of government of majority rule, that is the form of government called democracy, which was prevalent in Greece and in some city-states through the centuries. And they explicitly wrote about democracy and described its evils. The evil represented primarily by Socrates having to take poison because the majority has decided that his particular speech or his advocacy of his philosophy was bad, and therefore he had to die. And of course he accepted it because he was for democracy. So they rejected democracy, and they established something very unique. They established what you described correctly as a constitutional republic, which is not a majority rule. It precludes or excludes certain issues from the right of the majority to dictate. That is, you have freedom of speech, whether the majority thinks that's a good thing or a bad thing. You have freedom to your own property, whether the majority thinks it's a good thing or a bad thing. And in that sense, they established the first non-democratic government that was still served the public. It served the public by protecting the public's, the individual's rights. The right to life, liberty, property, and the pursuit of happiness. So that is the essential nature of the American government. We've shifted away from that essential nature and become more democratic, I think, to our own detriment, and less you know, they're sticking to this idea of rights. But let me now address this issue of corporations. I don't think corporations are persons. I don't think corporations are individuals. Clearly, they're not. What corporations are, and protecting corporations and allowing, granting them, in a sense, the right to free speech and other rights, is basically a recognition of the individuals, the owners of the corporations, right to property and right to pursue their own happiness and right to liberty. That is, corporations get their rights, and I believe churches do and non-for-profits do and all other entities that are formed by a collection of individuals. They get their rights from the rights of the individual. A corporation is no different than a corner grocery store. A corner grocery store happens to have one owner. A corporation has many owners, but they each derive their right to act from the rights of their owners.
Actually, that's not the case. If you read case law and you look at the Supreme Court decisions, you see that corporations are clearly defined as a separate entity. That when you create a corporation, you are giving birth to a new individual. Our question, should corporations be considered persons under the law? You are giving birth to a new person. You get a federal employer ID number. It's a unique identity. It is capable of standing at court. It is capable of suing or being sued. It has its own identity, and its rights and privileges are unique to it.
But that is true. The only right and privilege
the individuals
unique,
who own it.
The only rights or privileges unique to a corporation are the issue of limited liability. When you form a partnership like a law firm or a consulting firm, you get an employee ID, you can be sued, you have all those. The only difference between a corporation and a partnership, according to the law, is the issue of limited liability. And the issue of limited liability is a contractual issue primarily. It's recognized in the law, but it is primarily a contractual issue between the shareholders, i.e. the owners of the corporation, and its creditors, that is, the banks and other forms of creditors that are out there. That is the essential difference between a corporation and other forms of business. And again, whatever rights the corporation has, and I believe it should have all these rights, it derives from its owners, the rights of its owners.
Corporations, for example, have the right of citizenship. That is to say, a corporation can cease being an American citizen and start being a Bahamian citizen in 1 hour. You and I can't do that. A corporation can be fined. A corporation can't experience pain.
But corporations can be fined, as can partnerships, and can any corporate entity, as can a non-for-profit, it can be fined. A non-for-profit can shift its domicile from the United States to Bermuda. And it's also it's also untrue to say that a corporation is a citizen. It clearly isn't. A corporation cannot vote. A corporation does not serve in the army. A corporation is indeed, today in America, corporations have far fewer rights than individuals. Individuals
Therefore,
have free
why
speech.
Should, than why individuals. Should corporations have the right to free speech?
Why do they have
Nike,
the right?
For example, have the right to lie to people?
They don't have the right to lie to people any more than you have a right to lie to people. You have a right. Well, to free speech, and corporations have a right to free speech because they are owned by individuals like you. They are just an instrument for the owners to express themselves. The government has no right to limit the expression of anybody, not the CEO of a corporation, not the owners of a corporation, not its shareholders, not you, not me, not anyone, not a not-for-profit, not a partnership. The government should not have a right. It does, unfortunately, limit speech primarily of corporations. But it shouldn't have. It shouldn't limit the speech of anybody.
But a corporation is not an anybody. A corporation is a legal fiction.
But that's not true.
It's
a corporation is a legal entity. There's a difference between a legal entity and a legal fiction. Just like what's the difference between a corporation and a partnership? A partnership is a legal entity, just like a corporation is a legal.
They're different structures that have different laws defining them.
Sure, one is as legitimate as the other. The one.
So then, why
you don't
is
say
a partnership
fiction? Why do you say a corporation is a legal fiction? It's an
why
entity.
Does a partnership then not have the right of privacy and not have the right of free speech, but a corporation should?
Of course it does, and if it doesn't, let me just say that if it doesn't, then it should. That is, I'm not defending the U.S. Supreme Court, and I'm not defending the way the government executes its power. Indeed, American corporations do not have the right to free speech, as the tobacco industry is discovering. They are denied free speech at every opportunity. They are heavily regulated. They are taxed. They every right that we as ordinary individuals take for granted, the corporate entities, and once you become a CEO, you do not have. That is, the problem with American corporations today is not that they have too many freedoms, is that they're not free enough. And I think we all suffer the consequences of have corporations that are put in a straitjacket. And indeed, that's true of partnerships, and that's true of all legal entities out there. We live today in a country which restrains our ability to act, and I think the Founding Fathers would be horrified by the state of America today and the violation of rights that is committed by our government left and right against corporations, individuals,
partnerships. I agree, although I'd say they'd be horrified by the violations of rights being done by our corporations.
Corporations
let's continue this conversation. We've got a break coming up here. We're talking with Dr. Euron Brook of the Ayn Rand Institute. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Attention all plaintiffs. If personal injury, medical malpractice, accident, or other disaster has left you helpless and desperate, call now 800-586-5493 and receive up to $50,000 instant cash assistance. Express lawsuit funding provides no risk, no payments needed cash to people with pending lawsuits. The money is yours until your case settles. You pay nothing. We only collect when your lawsuit settles. Call us now. 800-586-5493. Your lawsuit has merit, and the cash is yours to do with whatever you need. Take care of living expenses, credit cards, car payments. No payments needed until your case settles. No employment requirements. No credit checks. Call now. 800-586-5493. Your cash is waiting for your call. Express Lawsuit Funding is waiting to help you. Call 800-586-5493.
Wouldn't it be great if you could get everything you need for successful estate planning in one package? Well, now you can. The new Master Estate Kit offers a collection of legal power that would cost you $500 or more if prepared by a lawyer. Here's what you get. First, a legal will kit, one praised by nearly 500,000 buyers. Second, a living will kit that assures your wishes will be followed in case of an irreversible injury or illness. And third, a power of attorney kit that includes all the required forms. Order today and we'll include the new Family Legal Guide. It answers all your questions about small claims court, landlord agreements, personal bankruptcy, and much more. An $80 value, the complete Master Estate Kit costs only $39.95. For immediate delivery of the Master Estate Kit and your free Family Legal Guide, call 1-800-221-0393. Pay only $39.95 plus shipping. Every kit carries an unlimited money-back guarantee. Call 1-800-221-0393 now. That's 1-800-221-0393.
Sherwood Baylert is a member of Congress and, despite that, not a bad guy. He's a New York Republican who's been in the House for more than 20 years, and he loves the place. Fine. It's said that some people who muck manure for a living come to love the smell, so everyone to their own taste. But I thought Sherwood had been sniffing the congressional perfumes a bit too deeply when he recently declared that the House is, quote, the one institution in the whole wide world that's the personification of this great democracy of ours. Democracy? The great majority of Americans are factory workers, clerks, cab drivers, dirt farmers, teachers, Main Street merchants, programmers, waitresses, health care workers, and the like. How many of them serve in Congress, or are even marginally represented by those who serve there? About 70% of Americans make less than $50,000 a year. How many of our Congress critters go to Washington from such an income perspective? Indeed, the U.S. Public Interest Research Group reports that nearly half of the newly elected members of Congress are millionaires, which 99.5% of Americans are not. And if the House is so representative of our people, why didn't we get a pay raise 4 of the last 5 years as they gave themselves? Why don't we have top-flight health coverage paid for by taxpayers as they do? Why don't we get golden, no-worry pensions as they do? Phil Graham is one example of congressional apartness from the rest of America. The Texas senator, who just retired, opposed any government program to help regular folks while he slavishly served the corporate powers that financed his elections. He became a millionaire while in office. And now that he's out, we the people will send him a retirement check of $78,534 every year. He'll get more doing nothing than 80% of us will make working day in and day out. This is Jim Hightower saying, that's the personification of plutocracy, not of democracy.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
You can't always get what you want. No. You can't always get what you want. You can't always get what
you want. Welcome back to the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. Lee Iacocca, another Ford executive, according to Jeff Milchen of ReclaimDemocracy.org, had used a life value estimate of $200,000 as being what a human life was worth, and priced the company cost from severe burn injuries with the Pinto at $67,000 per incident. Next, they calculated the cost of saving an estimated 180 people from being burned to death. It actually turned out to be 500 who died. And preventing scores of serious injuries by recalling the Pintos and fixing the fuel tank. Their conclusion? Killing 180 people, maiming hundreds more, and shattering families' lives was more profitable than spending $11 per auto, Ford's estimate, to make them far safer. They hid behind the shield of the corporate Fourth Amendment right to privacy to conceal this crime, and this corporation cannot be put in prison. We're talking with Dr. Yaron Brook of the Ayn Rand Institute, AYNRAND.org. Dr. Brook, what's wrong with that?
Well, that's complete nonsense. If they committed a crime, the CEO and the corporate executives of that corporation could be put in prison, as we're seeing right now. Martha Stewart might go to prison.
Martha Stewart has not committed a corporate crime. She committed insider trading, which is the same thing that George Bush did.
Sure, if you commit a crime in the name of a corporation, you go to prison. Who is going to go to prison in a corporation?
A corporation
is not an individual, therefore you can't put it behind bars. But the whole depiction of the Pinto case is absurd. If you buy a cheap car in America today, any cheap car, is it more or less safe than an expensive car? It's less safe than an expensive car because an expensive car, they spend a lot of money on safety precautions. A Mercedes-Benz is more safe than a Chevy Blazer.
$11 modification is going to be responsible for 500 deaths.
Well,
this was a cover-up. They knew it after people started dying.
It actually went to trial. They did not. Their privacy right was not protected under the Fourth Amendment. All the documents were shown, and they got sued and they paid up. People have to make the evaluation every day. Every day when you build a product. Of how much risk do people take? That is an evaluation people make every day in every product that you build, because there is no such thing as a riskless product. There is no such thing as a risk-free society.
Dr. Brook,
how much do you price a human life? You make it $60,000, you make it $2 million. At some point, you have to put a price, because every product is potentially risky, particularly an automobile on the street. And if you make it risk-free, then it costs $100,000 and nobody can afford to drive. And what you would do then is price most America out of being able to afford an automobile if you made them risk-free.
The word corporation does not exist in the United States Constitution.
Sure, it doesn't. Jefferson, neither does the word non-for-profit organization.
Thomas Jefferson,
I have a right as the CEO of a non-for-profit organization to express my entities' views about the world, and I have free speech just like the CEO of a corporation has the right to free speech and express the views of the corporation.
No, you as an individual citizen of the United States protected
by the
Bill of
Rights. No, me as the CEO of a non-for-profit.
Me as the CEO of a non-for-profit,
I have a right to express myself, just as the representatives of a corporation have the right to express themselves. There's no difference between the two.
Sure, but the corporation itself...
But what is a corporation itself if not the owners and employees of that corporation?
That's a legal abstraction. When those owners die, the corporation continues to exist.
There is no other entity other than, you know, in finance, I'm a finance professor by trading. In finance, we view a corporation as a nexus of contracts. All it is a place in which contractual relationships are set. And, you know, employment contracts, debt contracts, ownership contracts. That's it. When a corporation expresses itself...
Why should an entity like that, that's that abstract, have human rights under the Bill of Rights? We've got a break coming up here, Dr. Brooks. If you can hold the line for just a moment, Dr. Brooks, we've got to go to a commercial. We'll be back in about 2 minutes, and I'd love to hear your response to that. Get out and vote today at MoveOn.org. Stay with the Tom Hartman program. We'll return in just a few moments.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Hope is a more effective motivator than fear, offering a more potent reason to protect the environment. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Environmental problems are often described in doom and gloom terms, with the finger of blame pointing in many directions. But Jane Elder says that might not be the best way to reach people.
When you look at the history of environmental communications and messages, a lot of our messages tend to get wrapped into sacrifice, guilt, it's your fault, all those kinds of negatives, which it's really easy for people to be put off by.
Elder directs the Biodiversity Project, a nonprofit based in Madison, Wisconsin. She says many people feel hopeless when it comes to environmental problems.
We go to these psychological responses to overwhelming news, and that's just, you know, the way the human psyche deals with big, bad news that we feel powerless about. So I think part of the challenge to penetrate through that is to find ways that do connect with people's sense of hope, their sense of personal need to be involved, and then provide practical steps that are real and doable and empowering.
Elder says people respond positively when they learn that what they buy or how much they drive really does matter. She says most want to leave a better world for the next generation.
We look at the values that motivate people to care about the environment, and they're pretty lofty things. It's about family. It's about future. It's about how we can live together on the planet. It's about beauty. It's about permanence. These things are really important to people and not just Americans. And when we can have a conversation on that level, then you can talk about hope. You can talk about solutions. You can talk about actions that real people can take and move it out of that old box of everything's awful and there's nothing we can do.
That's Jane Elder of the Biodiversity Project. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network. The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
One, two,
three, four. Talk radio for the rest of us. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Sales of the 200 largest corporations in the world equal 27.5% of the world's gross domestic product, according to the United Nations. The 82 largest American corporations in the year 2000 election cycle contributed $33,045,832 to political action committees. And as somebody who's running the board, kill that music, please. In 94% of the U.S. House of Representatives races, the candidate who won the most money won the race. We're speaking with Dr. Yaron Brook of the Ayn Rand Institute, AYNRAND.org. Dr. Brook, how can you, on the one hand, say that a corporation is a nexus of contracts, an abstraction, a legal abstraction, and on the other hand, say that the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, and presumably the 14th as well, the Bill of Rights that the founders fought and many of them died to put in place, that specifically say persons, people, and humans should be applied to these institutions, these abstractions?
Well, as I said, they should be applied because it is individuals who own them. And let me just explain what I mean by this. When I, as an individual, have a right to all those rights in the Bill of Rights, so the right to life, liberty, property, and the pursuit of happiness, I do not lose those rights. When I group up with maybe another 10, maybe another 20, maybe another million people to form a commercial venture, I do not lose those rights to speech, to property, to privacy when I form that group. The rights of that group...
I'm not saying you do.
Let me finish. The rights of that group are derived from my rights. So let's say I own shares in a corporation. I have a right to speak. When the corporation speaks, it is speaking for me. If I don't like the way the corporation is speaking on my behalf, I can sell those shares or I can vote for different management. But they are speaking on my behalf. They are my representatives. And in that sense, the corporation is my entity, and it whatever rights it has are derived from my rights. That is, I'm the one who has the right. So when I form a corporation, I don't lose my right to speech. And indeed, the problem in America today, and the reason corporations spend so much money on politics, is that the rights of the owners of corporate America, the rights of shareholders, are being attacked left and right by Congress and by the president. We have regulation in this country that is just bizarre and absurd. We have overtaxation of corporations, and that is not the fact that they're attacking the rights of the corporation, which, as you said, is just a legal entity. They're attacking my right as an owner of that corporation. It is my property. It is my free speech that is being attacked. If I own the shares of a tobacco company and you limit my ability to advertise, you are limiting my right as an individual to express my opinion about tobacco. When
but
you
you're also
attack
using
me
that corporation
for, and of course,
to
the
try
next
to...
stage is that you attack my ability as an owner of McDonald's to try to sell hamburgers. Or, you know, you attack my right as an owner of Ford to sell automobiles. So it is my right as an individual that you are attacking, not, you know, some amorphous, ambiguous right of a corporation. You're right. We should bring it back to individual rights, to personal rights. Let's respect the right of the owners of a corporation, the owners of partnerships, the owners of self-proprietorships, to their right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
I don't think that anybody is suggesting that a stockholder should give up their rights.
By regulating corporations, you are violating the rights of individuals.
I own one share of Marriott Corporation, which I bought many years ago so I could get a 10% discount in their hotels. I don't think that that means that I can speak on behalf of Marriott or that
you
if Marriott
you can't speak on behalf of Marriott, but whether you like it or not, Marriott speaks on your behalf. That is, you are now an owner of Marriott. When they speak as a corporate entity, they are speaking on your behalf. And if you don't like what Marriott
what
represents,
is
then you
that,
should sell that share.
Yeah, what you're suggesting is that because we humans have rights under the Constitution of the United States, that when we create a secondary entity, that that entity should have human rights, and that that entity should also shield us from responsibility for our actions.
Entity does not shield us from
actions. Well, that was your starting point, is that a corporation gives you limited liability.
To be shielded. The corporation shields us from liability derived from other parties who have engaged with that corporation knowing that that shield exists. That is, it is a voluntary contractual relationship between two entities that know the rules of the game. So But if the corporation is engaged in criminal activity, and as when corporations have been engaged in criminal activity, as, for example, you could argue Enron or some of these other corporations have, people will go to jail. There will be responsibility will be held. Companies are driven into bankruptcy. Shareholders lose everything in those corporations when those corporations misbehave. So the idea that somehow corporations don't suffer the consequences of criminal activity is just wrong. I mean, open the newspaper every day, and every day there's somebody justly or usually unjustly being brought to prosecution for what the corporation or the representatives of the corporation, because corporations can't act beyond what their representatives act. When the representatives act, the corporation suffers.
1-800. I strongly disagree. Let me just say, but we've got a caller here, so we'll go to 1-800. Talk yes is our number, 825-5937. Roy from Rio Rancho, New Mexico. Roy, you've got a question for our guest.
Yeah, hi Tom. I actually had two. Would your guest support a three strikes and you're out rule, so that any time that a corporate executive officer is convicted of something, third time they dissolve the corporation and
Roy, my guest is ignoring the fact that corporations themselves get convicted of things. But
Well,
question.
If the corporation gets convicted, how about they just ban them, liquidate them, and throw them out?
Corporate death penalty. Dr.
I mean, we put shoplifters in jail for life.
The fact is,
the
corporations that engage in criminal activity, that's exactly what happens. They get fined huge amounts of money, and most of them go bankrupt. That you don't need a three-strike
law because
that's indeed what happens.
You are either absolutely a total liar or totally ignorant. One of the two.
Well, give me an example of a corporation that's been engaged in criminal activity.
We don't need personal attacks on the show here, Roy. Yeah.
When you say that the average corporation, when they get caught, go bankrupt.
Get caught of doing what?
Name me a tobacco company that has gone out of business.
Well, what has the tobacco company done that is criminal?
Years.
Tell me what tobacco companies have done that is criminal. And the only reason, by the way, the federal government is keeping the tobacco industry alive is in order to suck as much tax money out of them as possible. They are a cash cow for politicians. That's why they're kept alive.
I think Roy, we've got your point, and I appreciate your calling in. Dave in Silverdale, Washington, has a question for Dr. Brook. Dave, welcome to the program.
Not really a question as much. It's just, you know, when I listen to this,
I can't hear.
Whoever's running the board there, turn Dave's volume up. And Dave, if you could start over again, we couldn't hear you.
Okay, thanks, Tom. Not so much a question as a comment in that, you know, I'm a person who probably thinks like a libertarian in many ways, reads libertarian materials, and subscribes to libertarian mailing lists, but this is why I can never really be a libertarian, because it's ultimately kind of a very intellectual argument. It's heartless. It's void of ideas like personal responsibility and the kind of the sacred nature of humanness. And to now assign the all the liberties of and freedoms of the individual to a corporation, but just accept the fact that any liabilities are masked. And I think the previous caller did have one point with, like, the tobacco industry. How do you kill millions of people? How do corporations destroy the environment and then stand blameless and be shielded by liability? And, you know, I mean, your caller gives himself away when he says that, oh, corporations, they're always, look at all of them being prosecuted, most of them wrongly. And so, you know, I mean, I guess if you can go out nowadays and apologize for millionaires, the sky's the limit in terms of speaking engagements and book deals.
Okay, Dr. Brook, thank you, Dave, for your comments. Dr. Brook, you want to comment?
Was there a question there? Because I could barely hear him.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
let me just comment that I'm not a libertarian, so, you know, I don't want that confusion to get in. I you know, libertarians do not believe in morality. I believe in a very strong moral code. Libertarians, many of, do not believe in government at all. I believe in a strong government that does only one thing but does it well, and that is protect individual rights.
Okay. Dr. Brook, the Environmental Protection Agency, which Richard Nixon brought into being, had a whistleblower tip on a chemical factory that they were emitting toxins.
They went out and said, we'd like to inspect your factory. The corporation said, no, you can't come in here. We have Fourth Amendment rights of protection. Now, this corporation also asserts that its employees lose their Fourth Amendment rights of privacy as soon as they step on the property of the corporation, because the corporation owns that property. And so it says that it can extract their bodily fluids and analyze them.
Right.
It can listen in on their telephone conversations. It can monitor their keystrokes. So the corporation claims that its employees have lost their Fourth Amendment rights of privacy. But the corporation claimed that the EPA couldn't come in because of privacy. So the EPA hired a pilot and a small plane, flew over the top of the factory, took pictures, found, in fact, that the corporation was polluting. This corporation sued the EPA and took it all the way to the Supreme Court, claiming that their Fourth Amendment right of privacy was violated. None of the stockholders of the corporation were speaking out on this. This was the corporation itself.
Sure they were. Whether they liked it or not, they were speaking out on it. That is, the owners of the corporation elect the managers to speak for them. When the managers are protecting Fourth Amendment rights, they are protecting the Fourth Amendment rights of the shareholders. That land is owned by somebody. It is owned by the shareholders. If the EPA steps on that land, they are violating the shareholders' Fourth Amendment rights. When you limit the speech of a corporation, you're violating the shareholders' freedom of speech. The managers speak for the shareholders, and if you don't like that as a shareholder, you can replace the management or you can sell your shares. Now, let me also add that I believe, you know, I believe the EPA should not exist, but I think that, yes, of course the corporation has the right, the Fourth Amendment right. You can't search and seizure somebody's property. There is a somebody here. The somebody here is the shareholders. And let me also add that privacy rights are a derivative of property rights. You do not have complete privacy when you enter onto my property. If I ask you at the door whether you have a gun or not, you can't say, I have the right for property. I don't have to tell you when walking into my house whether you have a gun or not. I have every right, if you want to come into my house, to search you. If you don't want to come into my house, you can leave. That's fine. The same with employment. It's my property, i.e. the shareholder's property, and they have a right to determine the conditions of employment that an employee engages in. And if the employee doesn't like it, they can turn around and walk away.
So the corporation has the right to poison our air?
The corporation has a right to act in its own interest. If it is poisoning the air, you have a right to sue the corporation and demand damages and to shut them down if they are truly causing you harm, but the burden of proof is on you to show that they are poisoning you. Absolutely.
Okay, 1-800-TALK-YES is the phone number, 825-5937, and Matt in Hawaii is on the line. Matt, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, I'm just calling to support your guest there, and I agree.
Dr. Euron Brook.
Yeah, almost wholeheartedly. He's logical. And I think, I mean, it's obvious that you have sort of a visceral kind of disdain for the corporation, and I think
me,
yes,
I've created seven corporations in my life that have done, several of them have done very well. I have no disdain for corporations at all.
Wow, I am really surprised at that. The way you've come off during this conversation,
I don't think that a corporation should have the rights that a human should. Yeah,
that?
I own one share of Marriott, but I've started seven corporations that have done a quarter of $1 billion in business in the last 30 years.
If your corporations were owned 100% by you, do they then have your rights?
No. They are a separate entity.
So you as the sole owner of a corporation have no right to speech, have no right to property,
none of the
constitutional guarantees, even though you own 100% of that corporate entity.
Your question embodies a double bind. You said you, as the sole owner of a corporation, have.
Absolutely.
That's like saying you, as the husband of your wife, don't have the right of free speech. You, as the owner of your dog, I mean,
well, the corporation
as a human
speaks
being,
for you.
Right,
if you're 100% over in a corporation, then a corporation speaks for you as the owner. Does it then, when you are in the role of CEO of that corporation, do you not have right to speech? Of course you do. And therefore, it makes no difference if it's 50% owned or if it's 1% owned. It still derives its right for speech, free speech from the owner's right for speech.
Matt, hang on just a second here. Matt, did you finish your question? Because we've got Joseph and John in Illinois and North Carolina.
Well, there's just a couple things. The gentleman is kind of a not appropriate word with the personal attacks. I mean, I can think of Arthur Anderson right off the bat. I mean, there was a 100-year-old. And it was actually a partnership, not a corporation, but one criminal conviction in the Enron scandal, boom, it's gone. No longer an entity. So So to say that it doesn't happen is utterly ridiculous. The other thing is that the corporations pay so much in tax, when I would contend, and I think maybe Dr. Brook would agree, the corporations don't make money. It is this legal entity. The only thing that makes money are people, and that would be the employees and the stockholders of that corporation. But corporations pay taxes, huge amounts of taxes.
Corporations make money. Corporations generate profits, and they distribute them in the form of dividends, or they use them for growth.
Double tax because of the tax on dividends. But let me add,
and any income
true,
that I get is double tax too when I pay sales tax on.
Because every time a corporation pays taxes, it basically passes on those taxes to consumers, and we all pay it through the cost of the goods that the corporation sells. A corporation qua entity, it's meaningless to say that it pays taxes. Some individual pays taxes. It's either the shareholder or the consumer, and I would bet anything, since the shareholders demand a certain return on their money, that is the consumer, the final consumer of the product, that pays all corporate taxes, 100% of them.
Well, that's
just
assuming
an
that corporations don't
tax.
Exist.
That's
assuming that corporations.
Truth.
Yeah, that's assuming that a corporation is simply an extension of its shareholders.
I mean, there's nothing else other than an extension of shareholders.
Then why is it recognized as a separate entity at law?
Well, I'm not going to justify the Supreme Court's ruling. I'm telling you what I think it should be, not what it is necessarily.
Great. Okay. Thank you. Dr. Yaron Brook of the Ayn Rand Institute, AYNRAND.org. Dr. Brook, thank you very much for being with us in the program today. We are out of time. We've got a couple of callers here. We'll wrap these up in just a minute. Stick around. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Now, everything you need for successful estate planning comes in one package. The new Master Estate Kit is a collection of legal power that would cost you $500 or more if prepared by a lawyer. Here's what you'll get. First, a legal will kit, one praised by nearly 500,000 buyers. Second, a living will kit that assures your wishes will be followed in case of an irreversible injury or illness. And third, a power of attorney kit that includes all the required forms. Order today and we'll include the new Family Legal Guide. It answers all your questions about small claims court, landlord agreements, personal bankruptcy, and much more. An $80 value, the complete Master Estate Kit costs only $39.95. For immediate delivery of the Master Estate Kit and your free Family Legal Guide, call 1-800-221-0393. Pay only $39.95 plus shipping. Every kit carries an unlimited money-back guarantee. Call 1-800-221-0393 now. That's 1-800-221-0393.
Do you want to own a computer but have less than perfect credit, bad credit, no credit? No problem. If you have a checking or savings account and can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months, Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved, guaranteed. You heard right. You're approved for a brand new name brand computer. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now. If you can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months and have a checking or savings account, you're already approved. Guaranteed. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now and tell us where you want your brand new name brand computer delivered. If you can afford $35 a week for just 12 months and have a checking or savings account, your brand new state-of-the-art PC will be on its way. Guaranteed. Bad credit, no problem. Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved for the computer of your dreams. Guaranteed. Call right now, 1-800-823-0157.
You hear that? Doug made his confession that he used hair color.
Yeah, yes, I was expecting to make it the treatise of the last month. Aren't you guys sweet?
I would recommend
sticking
with one color, however. Each month you'd have
I want to
different...
see you try the afro stuff.
Yeah, right. I'm going to do that.
I decided that it is not the color of the hair, but the head that it stuck to that's important.
Doug Stephan's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk.
not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to Lifestyles of the Wet and Stinky. We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
The Mike Molloy Show.
We are very lucky tonight to have joining us from California, Geneva, BartCop.com's resident astrologer. Can you tell us anything about George W. Bush's chart?
There was a lot of stuff in his chart. He's got a lot of aspects on his own that would indicate that he would be easily maneuvered into being a puppet, a front man, for people who have more of a scheme in mind like that.
He is a very weak man when you get right down to it, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Extremely weak-willed. What sort of looming obstacles might keep Bush from being reelected? Is he going to face some sort of impeachment, criminal charges? Can you elaborate?
Well, that would be nice. I mean,
it would.
If they did it to Clinton with as little as they had to go on.
Oh, my God.
Why not?
The Mike Molloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman radio program, where democracy is still alive and well. We've been talking with Dr. Yuron Brook of the Ayn Rand Institute, and we just have 2.5 minutes here or so to wrap up this hour, but we will continue in the next hour. We've got, I think, six folks on the hold. John in Coverdale, Illinois, had a comment or question. John, welcome to the program.
Yes, thanks. Hey, my question is to your caller. If I steal a car, or if I steal like 3 cars, I end up going to jail for like 25 years. But yet, it seems that if I defraud investors or if I raid a pension fund of $20 million, $30 million, well, then I go to jail for like 3. I was wondering if he could justify this.
Well, I would suggest that his response, and I don't certainly can't put words in his mouth, but I think that the response of that of the philosophical perspective that he represents is that those laws are just disproportionate and wrong, and that, you know, crimes are crimes and people should go to jail for them. My concern is that if you steal a car, you go to jail for 25 years. If a corporation commits a crime, the corporation can't go to jail. And there is a corporation can live forever. A corporation can tear off part of itself, throw it on the ground, and boom, create a new entity. A corporation can own others of its kind, which is considered slavery. It's illegal in the United States. A corporation has a lot of powers and abilities that humans don't. And when you give corporations this giant club of human rights, which the founders gave to us so that we could beat back government should it ever become oppressive, that corporation then rises up and represents a danger to we the people, to democracy itself. That's my concern about that, John. Thanks for the call. I appreciate your calling. Steve from Santa Fe, New Mexico. We've got just about a minute left here. The others who are on hold, Joseph, Luke, Jerry. Oh, we lost Steve. Luke from Long Beach, California. Luke, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. We got about 30 seconds here, okay. Luke, but if it's going to be a long one, we can hold you over the break. Go ahead.
Okay. I just wanted to make a comment about this. You know, the government was set up years ago not for corporations, it was set up for human individual rights. So in essence, he's, you know, violating his own rights when he's saying if a corporation breaks a law, you know, he's only, I would say he's only, it's kind of hard to explain, but he's violating his own rights when a corporation breaks the law, basically. And the government was never set up for, you know, corporation rights. It was set up for individual human rights.
There you go.
Doesn't make sense.
Well said, Luke. Makes perfect sense. Luke, thank you very much for calling, and I appreciate the comments. The folks who are still on hold, stick around. We'll pick your calls up after the top of the hour. 1-800-TALK-YES. You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
It's coming from the fields that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens, night and
been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
Hi, everybody. Doug Steffen here. It looks like we're having some minor technical problems here at the program.
Yes, thank you, in Mandarin Chinese.
Is it really? Mm-hmm.
Fantila is like cool.
Chinese.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. President Bush today is meeting with his Pakistani counterpart to thank him for his help in the so-called war on terrorism. General Pervez Musharraf is holding talks with the president at Camp David at the start of a six-day visit to the U.S. Musharraf is using his trip to discuss Islamabad's relations with India, as well as to shop for military equipment from the United States. Correspondent Steve Moore has more from Washington.
President Musharraf's visit is being seen as his reward for Pakistan's support of the U.S. action in Afghanistan. The Bush administration's lifted many sanctions imposed against Pakistan because of its nuclear arms program and the 1999 coup that brought General Musharraf to power. The Pakistani leader will spend part of his trip to the U.S. shopping for non-nuclear military equipment, but will also hold talks with American officials on Islamabad's relations with neighboring India. The U.S. is pressing Pakistan to end its help for militant groups in India-controlled parts of Kashmir. Steve Mort, Washington.
Russian President Vladimir Putin, meanwhile, has arrived in Britain now for a state visit. It's actually the first visit by a Russian leader since the days of the Tsar. More from correspondent Suzanne Chislett.
The last time a Russian leader came to Britain was almost 130 years ago. Then the yacht carrying Tsar Alexander II ran aground. No such problems this time, though, as President Putin's plane touched down at Heathrow. He was met by Prince Charles, heir to the throne, and a full state welcoming party. No pomp or ceremony is being spared, with a state procession down the Mall to Buckingham Palace, where the Russian leader will stay. A state banquet takes place on Tuesday evening before the serious business of the visit begins. The rest of the week will see a series of political meetings with Prime Minister Tony Blair on Iraq and the Middle East, and with business leaders about further increasing ties between the two countries. Suzanne Chislett, London.
Meanwhile, several British troops have now been killed during an attack in Iraq today. An announcement from the office of British Prime Minister Tony Blair confirms there were several attacks on British forces in Iraq today, one of which resulted in the deaths of six soldiers.
What's the big news in allergy medicine this season? It's a new name in non-drowsy relief, Allivert. New Allivert starts dissolving the instant it touches your tongue, without water. So you can take Allivert inside, outside, in your car, wherever you are. Allivert is non-drowsy 24-hour relief in a quick-dissolving tablet. New Allivert. Allergy medicine you can take right when you need it, wherever you are. Allivert. Use as directed.
This is Dr. Danny. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Dr. Danny.
Hey.
Man, listen, we're having a hard time potty training our son.
Well, that's a common problem. How old is your boy?
He's 26.
Paul, I have some bad news. At this age, potty training will be near impossible.
You kidding me?
No, but Paul, I do have some good news.
All right, man, what?
Mom, what's wrong?
My knees are killing me. I shouldn't have jogged this morning.
Today's my party. You gonna be okay?
I should be. The party's hours away.
And we have tons to do.
the moment of choice, Tylenol or Advil. Which works better to get you through the day? Truth is, Advil can give you longer-lasting relief, better relief than Tylenol for tough muscle aches and pain. And Advil is gentle on your stomach.
Mom, you look like you're having fun.
I really am.
For better relief, advance to Advil.
An independent commission appointed by Congress is now reviewing ways America's military academies handle reported sexual assault cases. Colorado Senator Wayne Allard today testified before Congress, and he called the investigation into the Air Force Academy that wrapped up last week, quote, incomplete. Allard says monitoring daily operations at the academy won't solve the problem.
I just want to have an instrument out here that I can look at and get an idea of what's happening at the academy, and then if there's some aberration in the facts that are coming forward, ask for explanations.
Other witnesses who have testified say the culture at the Air Force Academy has gotten away from stressing loyalty to values. The Academy has installed new regulations since dozens of female cadets came forward to report sexual assault cases that were improperly handled, they felt. The Independent Commission now has 3 months to evaluate the progress that's being made at both the Air Force and Naval Academies, as well as at West Point. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. A picture's worth a thousand words, so picture this. A toilet bowl. You know what car part is similar to that household favorite? Battery? Gas tank? No, those won't float. But when I come back, I'll tell you what does.
Doug is frugal.
Well, money doesn't grow on trees, you know.
The problem is Doug is about to buy a used car.
Yep, and I'm going to get ripped off!
And Doug doesn't know about Carfax, which lets you check a used car's history to see if it's been in an accident, has accurate mileage, stuff like that. So you know your money's well spent.
So I might save thousands?
Exactly, Doug. Just go to CARFAX.com or ask your dealer for a Carfax vehicle history report.
Hey, how about we go halfsies on the car?
How about nunsies?
How about somesies?
No. Carfax, the truth about used cars.
What's the automotive equivalent of your toilet bowl? Your carburetor. Both have little floats that control levels of liquid. Ever lifted the top of a toilet tank and bent the rod to stop water from flowing? Carburetors have similar float valves that adjust fuel level. In toilets, the excess water streams harmlessly to the sewer. But in carburetors, surplus fuel flows into the motor, causing engine damage, decreased gas mileage, and air pollution. All good reasons to include carburetor checks in your annual inspections. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to our program. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live from coast to coast on ground-based, what they call terrestrial radio stations, broadcasting on channel 145 of the Sirius Radio Satellite System for your car. And now, this month, I believe they came out with a home receiver, and also broadcasting live on the internet from radiopower.org and iamericaradio.com with archives at whiterosesociety.org. We've been talking about corporate personhood in the last hour, and we have a few calls still on the line about this. Jerry in Bellevue, Washington had some thoughts on the issue. Jerry, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. Thanks for calling 1-800-TALK-YES.
Oh, good morning. Well, I just wanted to comment. Your guest seems to think that a corporation is nothing more and nothing less than the aggregate of its shareholders. And I would state that that's not quite true, and the easiest example to show that is the concept of limited liability of the shareholders. And that is, if a bunch of my friends and I go down and toss garbage in the lake, we're all going to wind up in the pokey. If, however, we form a corporation and an employee of that corporation goes down and throws garbage in the lake, The employee probably winds up in the pokey. The corporation probably gets fined, but the shareholders have, you know, if assuming that they're not directors, don't have any liability in that. And that is, in fact, why a corporation does not inherit its rights from the shareholders.
Right. And oddly, up until the 1870s in the United States, most states construed shareholder responsibilities in such a way that if you were a shareholder, you could have gone to the pokey.
Yeah.
If your corporation did that. And this was before there was corporate personhood. It was more of a kind of libertarian perspective on it, although corporations had very specific limitations. There was a whole series of them. And let's see here. Corporations were explicitly chartered for the purpose of serving the public interest. Profit for shareholders was a means to that end. A charter was granted for a limited time, typically 30 or 40 years. Corporations could engage only in the activities necessary to fulfill their chartered purpose. They could be terminated if they exceeded their authority or caused public harm. The owners and managers were responsible for criminal actions committed on the job. Corporations could not make any political contributions whatsoever nor spend money to influence legislation. And a corporation could not purchase or own stock in other corporations nor own other property or any property other than that which was necessary to fulfill its chartered purpose. So things are very different today than they used to be. Corporations have acquired all these rights and powers and increasingly more immunities as well.
Yeah.
So I take it that's your point, too.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. They are not natural persons.
There you go. Yeah, they are artificial persons. Jerry, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. Good comment. And this is one of the big issues. Thursday of this week, I believe it is, the Supreme Court is expected to rule on the Caskey versus Nike case. When that Caskey versus Nike case comes down, it's going to be real interesting to see what happens. Steve in Coverdale, Illinois, has called 1-800-TALK-YES. Thank you for calling, Steve. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hello. Good day. Hey, I got good a. Day. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, I got a book here by Chuck Collins called Economic Apartheid in America, and it's on page 101. It's got a chart. It's titled Percentage of Federal Tax Collections from Individuals and Corporations. And here at the decade of the 90s, it shows that corporations contribute 15%, whereas individuals contribute 73%. So I thought, I didn't really think the corporations were being overtaxed on that point. But then Mr. Collins, in this book here, he also talks about, the rights coming from the shareholders and stuff like this. But, the shareholders, they have problems with the running of the corporation with, what they call stockholder initiatives. It's mm-hmm. difficult for, the shareholders, it's hard for them to get together and say, hey, I'm a shareholder, you're a shareholder, let's get together and force this corporation to do what we want it to do. And then, right. then also to the corporate governance boards, they're really limited there. And he also makes a suggestion that these corporate governance boards, they should be opened up to a larger community of people to where, the employees could have a seat on there, the unions could have a seat on there, and then community groups. Like, if you live downriver from this thing, you could have your people in there, on there, too. And I just thought that maybe it's the idea that we could have reforms on these
yeah.
corporate governance boards. And then also, just another point on Ayn Rand, my wife read Ayn Rand, and she was telling me that in a lot of those books, it ends with the story of a woman getting raped, and she enjoys it. I don't know. It's like, Ayn Rand, I'm skeptical. I don't know.
Yeah,
but that's basically what I had to say.
That's not my recollection. I read Atlas Shrugged years and years ago, and I don't recall that. Ayn Rand was an interesting thinker. I think that she missed some points. She also brought a lot to the table. But I would say that our guest's point on the tax thing would have been that the corporations are not actually paying taxes, that it's you and I paying taxes by virtue of our buying services from the corporation, and so the corporation just passes those taxes along. What contradicts that is that a corporation is using those things for which we pay taxes. That is to say, a corporation owns property. A corporation uses the police services. A corporation uses the fire department. A corporation is using the infrastructure of the roads. It's not the shareholders that are using that. Well, you could say they are by proxy through the corporation, but it is the corporation that is using that. And in exchange for those things that we all agree as members of a civic society we are going to pay for, we are going to collectively charge ourselves for, the corporation pays taxes. And to say that a corporation doesn't pay taxes is, in my opinion, nonsense, although I know that that's the argument du jour from the corporate side, from those folks who think the corporation shouldn't pay taxes. Steve, thank you very much for your comments. I appreciate the call. And I think that has flushed our lines. If you've got anything you want to talk about here in this hour, 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. I was reading an article about Howard Dean's announcement, and his there was a forum that Jesse Jackson hosted, and I got one of these epiphanies. It's been a while, and it was neat. It was like, whoa, yeah, wow. And here it was. They asked Howard Dean, how are we going to fund Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security and all this stuff? It's funded right now, not out of the income tax, but out of the payroll tax. In fact, the payroll tax is called that. Some people refer to it as the Social Security tax. And the payroll tax, nobody is suggesting we should cut, because the payroll tax stops at $87,000 a year. In other words, if you make $100,000 a year, you pay a payroll tax of 15.5% or whatever it is on that first $87,000. And after that, you don't pay any more tax. You don't pay any more payroll tax. If you make $1 million a year, you only pay a payroll tax on the first $87,000, and then you don't pay any tax beyond that on the payroll tax. And it just struck me, I mean, what a common sense thing that Dean is talking he says, let's just lift it to $80,000 a year. Well, why not take it right up to the top? I mean, it's if we're paying tax, you want a flat rate tax? There it is, right there. Steve Forbes should love it. Everybody pays that 15% or whatever it is, and you would have more than enough money to fund Social Security and Medicare and right on down. It would just think of the mind-boggling amount of cash it would generate if the wealthy, as well as middle-class working people, had to pay a payroll tax. Or even, as well as poor working people. You make $6,000 a year, you pay a payroll tax. You may not pay an income tax, but you're paying payroll tax. But if you make $1 million a year, you didn't pay an income tax on that $1 million a year. You only paid the payroll tax on the first $87,000. So, boy, some strange stuff going on with the taxes and things that can be done. The news from the Democrats, you'll notice from time to time we bring you the talking points of the various of the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. And this is the Democratic news. President Bush and the Republicans are at it again, they say. They commit the worst outrages against the American people, hiding behind patriotism, cutting backroom deals, rejecting compromises while counting on you not to pay attention to what they're doing. Just look at two recent examples. These are actually pretty good examples, they say. To restore $1 billion in critical military housing funds, Democrats proposed a tiny cut to the tax breaks Republicans gave to millionaires. Now, this is the housing, the quality of the housing for our GIs. Republicans refused. They kept the $1 billion in cuts to housing for our men and women in uniform and their families so that those earning more than $1 million or more per year could get $88,326 in tax breaks instead of $83,546. When it comes to choosing between the military and the millionaires, Republicans choose millionaires every time. And so it appears. And then this is the other one, this Westar Energy thing. This is as close to a bribery scandal as I've seen in a long time. When executives at the Midwestern energy company Westar wanted a special interest provision inserted into an energy bill, they knew just what they had to do. They drafted a detailed plan laying out campaign contributions from specific executives to specific GOP candidates to get what they called, quote, a seat at the table, end quote. And the main of those candidates, by the way, was Tom Delay. Delay anything, delay all this stuff, delay. Delay, Tom Delay, the former pesticide applicator. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma is on the line. Glenn, welcome to the Tom Hartman radio program.
Hi, Tom. Hey, Tom. My comment was about corporate malfeasance and the fact that in the majority of cases, from what I've read, it seems that the fines and penalties they pay compared to the amount of unfair profits or profiteering that they make are so minuscule percentage-wise that it really doesn't act as a deterrent to keep them from doing it in the future. I really don't think most of them. I really don't think most of them do go bankrupt because of that. I think it's almost like the Pinto story where it was more cost beneficial to avoid the $11 a car.
Yeah, yeah, you've got one or two. I mean, even Arthur Andersen, I mean, they went bankrupt and they theoretically vanished, but they have reinvented themselves. They are back. So, yes, good point. I just heard a cue in my ear, but I didn't hear what it said. I'm sorry. We're going to continue here. Okay. Glenn, thank you for your comment. I appreciate your calling. 1-800-TALK-YES, Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Thanks for that. Stay with the Tom Hartman radio program. We'll return in just a few moments.
You've supported her through every accomplishment in her life.
Cross, pull, I tied my shoes.
While your ultimate goal is to teach her to stand on her own.
Let go, I can do it.
There are things she just can't do without your support.
There were drugs and alcohol at the party.
Talk with the teens in your life. And if they're in substance abuse treatment and recovery, support them. Help them turn the hardest thing they've ever done into their greatest accomplishment. For information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
What's the one key ingredient missing from the relief of allergies that hurt? The pain reliever in Advil. Yes, Advil. New Advil Allergy Sinus is a one-of-a-kind formula that takes the pain out of allergies in a whole new way. A recent study showed that when Advil is combined with its allergy medicine, you get better relief of your worst allergy symptoms, all with less of the medicine that makes you drowsy. Advance to new Advil Allergy Sinus and stop allergies that hurt.
What magazine was the late Senator Paul Wellstone talking about when he said, at a time of growing media concentration, this magazine is an invaluable source of news and information that corporate media would too often prefer to ignore? He was talking about In These Times, a bi-weekly magazine of news, politics, and culture. In These Times has won more Project Censored awards than any other magazine. For 27 years, In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of the labor movement, feminism, grassroots politics, and minority communities. If getting a perspective other than what's in the mainstream media is important to you, In These Times is essential reading. In the words of best-selling author Barbara Ehrenreich, to people who say they're sick and tired of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated news media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Do it now and find out what you're missing. Look for In These Times in bookstores near you or visit them on the web at www.inthesetimes.com. That's www.inthesetimes.com.
Sherwood Baylert is a member of Congress and, despite that, not a bad guy. He's a New York Republican who's been in the House for more than 20 years, and he loves the place. Fine. It's said that some people who muck manure for a living come to love the smell, so everyone to their own taste. But I thought Sherwood had been sniffing the congressional perfumes a bit too deeply when he recently declared that the House is, quote, the one institution in the whole wide world that's the personification of this great democracy of ours. Democracy? The great majority of Americans are factory workers, clerks, cab drivers, dirt farmers, teachers, Main Street merchants, programmers, waitresses, healthcare workers, and the like. How many of them serve in Congress or are even marginally represented by those who serve there? About 70% of Americans make less than $50,000 a year. How many of our Congress critters go to Washington from such an income perspective? Indeed, the U.S. Public Interest Research Group reports that nearly half of the newly elected members of Congress are millionaires, which 99.5% of Americans are not. And if the House is so representative of our people, why didn't we get a pay raise 4 of the last 5 years as they gave themselves? Why don't we have top-flight health coverage paid for by taxpayers as they do? Why don't we get golden no-worry pensions as they do? Phil Graham is one example of congressional apartness from the rest of America. The Texas senator, who just retired, opposed any government program to help regular folks while he slavishly served the corporate powers that financed his elections. He became a millionaire while in office. And now that he's out, we the people will send him a retirement check of $78,534 every year. He'll get more doing nothing than 80% of us will make working day in and day out. This is Jim Hightower saying, that's the personification of plutocracy, not of democracy.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Radio program on the IE America Radio Network. These men and women are still the best of America, said George W. Bush on 11-11-02. They are prepared for every mission we give them, and they are worthy of the standards set for them by America's veterans. Our veterans from every era, the finest of citizens, we owe them the life we know today. They command the respect of the American people, and they have our everlasting gratitude, end quote. Shortly thereafter, he cut $1.5 billion from his budget for veterans' benefits. Stan in Birmingham, Alabama is on the line. Stan, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yes, good afternoon, Tom.
Hey, Stan.
Just wanted to say that I have a long-standing disagreement with the neoconservatives who are in power. I'm convinced that 90% of the freeloading, destructive welfare in this country has really been big business abuse over the past 200 years. And only roughly 10% of the destructive welfare has been public welfare.
Now, just about right. I think it's $18 billion goes to human services, and $150 billion in the last budget went directly to corporations in the form of grants.
Right. But I'm adding up all of the many needless wars that have really been instigated by giant corporate forces for monopoly power. Also, the destruction of small inventors, giant corporations, stomping small inventors in the ground who could have already solved most of our energy problems. And the list goes on, the rat-bait public mind control schools that were really invented by big business forces like Harvard Institution.
Mm-hmm.
And the list goes on, but corporate finance forces have always spent big bucks behind the scenes to promote a Walt Disney view of history. And I think most Americans are still victimized by a Walt Disney view of history, fiction, and ruthless censorship that is sponsored by big business has destroyed what could have been our historical perspective. No single force in this country has done more to destroy old-fashioned self-reliance than big business abuse. That
there,
is,
there you
if we
go,
make
Stan.
A careful review of history.
Teddy Roosevelt would agree with you 100%. Stan, thanks for sharing that with us, and thanks for calling in. I appreciate it. I appreciate your right-on comments there, Stan, as always. Jerry in North Carolina has called 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program, Jerry. Jerry, you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
I sure can. What's up? Jerry, you're breaking up. I think maybe you're on a cell phone there, and it's not a particularly good connection. Why don't you try calling us back in a few minutes after you've moved into another cell area or however you're going with that. This president is essentially using Argentina as his fiscal model, Howard Dean said. Howard Dean announced his candidacy for the presidency. Was it yesterday? I believe, yeah, it was yesterday in Burlington, Vermont, here in the People's Republic of Vermont. He said, and I quote, people are not going to invest in a country whose currency is dropping as rapidly as ours is relative to the euro, and they're not going to invest in a country that can't manage its affairs. The big concern about deflation right now, and you know what's going to happen, the currency of the United States crashing. I got a fascinating email from Shelby at radiopower.org that I want to share with you after this break, just about this topic and what happened in Germany back before the 1930s and how that in some ways led to that. But Howard Dean goes on to say, this president is running the country the same way Enron was run. The president's father called it voodoo economics, and I think he was right, Dean said. He said, and I quote, until the United States changes its oil policy, which we have no hope of under this president, we're not going to see peace in the Middle East because the money that goes to funding terror is our oil money funneled through the Saudis and others. Get out and vote today with your, if you got a ballot from MoveOn.org. We'll see who's going to be their choice for the Democratic nomination. Stay with the Tom Hartman program. We'll return in just a few moments.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
As the unemployment rate in Iraq continues to worsen, and where by some estimates nearly half the country's populace is already jobless, those without work are running out of patience. More than 15,000 people have joined a new Iraqi union called the Union of the Unemployed in Iraq, or UUI, and it's been in negotiations with U.S. Civil Administration officials over the last 3 weeks, hoping to win jobs or unemployment insurance payments from the new ruling coalition. But the union says talks have stalled. Now they're organizing nationwide protests for July 3rd, which some in the UUI expect could draw well more than 100,000 people.
Need a job? Go directly to jail. City officials in Taunton, Massachusetts have taken a novel approach to tackle a budget deficit. Lay off the city's unionized municipal employees and replace them with shackled prisoners. Taunton city councilors hope the chain gangs will help them replace 50 workers and cut into $3 million of red ink, but Laborers Union Local 1144 has vowed to put a halt to the plan. The union says the practice is not only disgusting, but a violation of its existing contract, which prohibits the city from accepting so-called volunteer labor during a time of layoffs.
Sources within the British Fire Brigades Union say the government may have spied on union members during the nine-month contract dispute, which ended earlier this month. According to the Manchester Guardian newspaper, union officials took great pains to keep their internal communications secure, even going so far as to buy new mobile phones, whose functions were disabled to restrict their ability to call only other phones in the group. Even so, government negotiators always seem to know what the union members were discussing. The FBU says it doesn't have enough evidence to request a formal investigation into the matter, but it's still working to build its case.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
The best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Room. We've got some conversation going on there about the presidential primaries. If you want to get to the chat room, go to TomHartman.com, click on the radio show link, click on the chat room link, and that'll take you to the International Trade Forum on CompuServe. Push the chat button. We're using that room in that forum because the software is really neat. It works really well. You can have good moderated discussions there. And some interesting discussions. One person says, I read Kucinich's stuff, although he wants to create another cabinet position. Somebody else says, I like Bob Graham. Another one says, hand me another beer. I can't type straight. Another says, you're right. The left has to reinvent the rhetoric. And here's where I'd like to see a Dean Graham ticket. I'd like to see a Kerry Graham ticket. But here's a I think this is a really important point. Anybody who wants my vote, this writer says in our chat room, anybody who wants my vote has to show that they are willing to attack AWOL, that's George W. Bush, who went AWOL during the Vietnam War for 18 months, and make issues out of all the crimes this administration has committed. Otherwise, they'll just get eaten alive. And Kerry, and then somebody else says, Kerry doesn't have that look. Kucinich isn't shy about attacking, but anyhow, it's an interesting discussion. If you want to comment on these things, 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. Now, this is this thing that Shelby shared with me a few days ago. And Shelby noted that the source of this was William L. Schurer's Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. I don't know if this is verbatim or if it's paraphrased, if Shelby put this together or whether these are the actual words of Schurer. So I'll be sure to cite Schurer here in the event that this is fair use usage. The mark had begun to slide in 1921, the mark being the currency of Germany. Our currency is called the dollar. In Germany, it was called the mark. Still is. Well, actually, now it's called the euro. It began to slide in 1921 when it dropped to 75 to the dollar. That is, to buy $1, you had to spend 75 marks, or an individual mark was worth a little more than a penny, about a penny and, what, a quarter would it be? I don't do reverse math that fast. The next year, it fell to 400 to the dollar, which means that it dropped its value more than fourfold. And by the beginning of 1923, it took 7,000 German marks to buy $1. In the fall of 1922, the Germans asked the Allies to grant a moratorium on the reparation payments, and the French bluntly refused. When Germany defaulted, the French ordered troops in to occupy the Ruhr, Germany's industrial heartland, which supplied four-fifths of its coal and steel production. This paralyzing blow to the German economy united the people as they had not been united since 1914. The workers of the Ruhr declared a general strike, and on it went out. Now, here's the situation. Germany lost World War I. They had to pay reparation to the nations that they had attacked and harmed in that war. And by deflating the value of their currency, by decreasing the value of the mark, they were able to pay back these debts, which were in fixed amounts, with marks that were relatively easier to get. So they had a million mark debt to France, and a million marks, say, at 1920 equaled $1 million. By 1923, a million marks equaled maybe $50,000. So it was easier to pay back their debts by creating this deflation. They were in this huge debt. In 1923, the mark fell to 18,000 to the dollar, and by July of 1923, it was at 160,000 marks to buy $1. Now, it totally went out of control. It's totally spun out of control. And the punchline to all this, which I'm working up to, is how did this happen? What brought this about? By August, it took a million marks to buy $1. And by November of 1923, when Hitler thought his hour had struck, it took 4 billion German marks to buy a single dollar. This all took less than 1 year.
It wiped out the purchasing power of wages. People would go home during their coffee breaks and during their lunch breaks to buy things because by the end of the day, the money would be worth so much less. The life savings of the middle class were wiped out. This inflation, and this is not deflation, this is inflation. This is where the currency becomes worth less, so it takes more and more of it to buy something. This inflation could have been halted by merely balancing the German budget, a difficult but not impossible feat. Adequate taxation could have achieved this, but the Republic did not dare to tax adequately. After all, the cost of World War I, which was 164 billion marks, had not been met in part by taxation, but 93 billion of it by loans, 29 billion by treasury bills, and the rest by increasing the production of paper money. Instead of drastically raising the taxes on those who could pay, the Republic in 1921, and this is what set this thing off, actually reduced taxes. The government deliberately let the mark tumble in order to free the country of its huge debts. Now, the United States, 25 years ago, 30 years ago, before Ronald Reagan came into office, the United States was the largest creditor in the world. More countries, more people owed us money than we owed. People used our currency. It was the currency of much of the world. It still is to a large extent, although the euro is taking it fast. And the main thing that's holding up the dollar right now is the fact that oil is denominated in dollars for international trade. If that were to change to euros, which is what Saddam had done with Iraqi oil last year, if that were to spread across OPEC or spread around the world, it would be a major disaster for the dollar. The dollar could go the same way as the German mark. According to Scherer, the government deliberately let the mark tumble in order to free the country of its huge debt. So if you owed 164 billion marks and you make a billion marks worth a dollar, you can pay off the entire national debt with $164, which is essentially what the Germans were doing. This enabled German heavy industry to wipe out its debt by refunding its obligation in now worthless marks. So all the corporations that held debt, that had sold bonds, this is how corporations go into debt, is they sell bonds. You can buy corporate bonds. It's called commercial paper. You can buy them, you know, from any stockbroker. All these corporations that were in debt, they were able to pay off their bonds, buy back their debt for nothing. It wiped out Germany's debt and left the country financially unencumbered. The reason that this is important is that some of the trends, not all of them, but some of the trends that led to this in Germany are happening right now. I'm quoting Scherer here, spend heavily on militarism, run up the national debt, cut taxes, devalue the currency. When the nation goes bankrupt, a two-class system is born. From there, it's simple to convert the nation into a fascist dictatorship, as Hitler later demonstrated. Actually, I think Shelby wrote that. Shelby of RadioPower.org. This is, I mean, let us hope this is not the future that we're seeing. The UN, this is from the Wall Street Journal a couple of days ago. The U.S. and Europe are battling over an ambitious global treaty. We're going through here the best of the rest of the news. I just want to share with you some of the stuff that's happening that you might not have noticed, that certainly is not being reported widely on the major media. Although this article by Bob Davis, UN reins in Europe's ambition on UN treaty to ban corruption, was in the Wall Street Journal. It's interesting what you find in the journal, because it's kind of like the power brokers talking to themselves, and they're sometimes surprisingly candid. And I quote, the U.S. and Europe are battling over an ambitious global treaty to ban corruption, largely because Europe wants the pact to cover businesses, and the U.S. wants it restricted to governments. In other words, our government is saying, we don't want to sign any, we don't want those thinking treaties if they require businesses to avoid corrupt business practices. in Europe and the rest of the world, and of course the United States under the Clinton administration, were all working very hard to get this treaty passed. Quoting the Wall Street Journal again, many European officials remain dubious about the U.S. commitment to multilateral accords, especially after the Bush administration rejected international pacts on global warming in a war crimes court. They go on to say the U.S. position represents a striking turnaround from several years ago when the Clinton administration pressed a reluctant Europe to crack down on bribes. But now we're turning back from that. Among the provisions being debated, the Wall Street Journal says, are prohibitions on bribery, favoritism, false documents, and other corrupt practices among businesses as well as government agencies, and requirements that political parties disclose their sources of financing. The U.S. wants the convention to be limited to subjects such as government corruption and recovery of stolen assets by the likes of Saddam Hussein. We are going to veto this treaty because it requires corporations to act in a non-corrupt fashion. The U.S. especially objects. This is from the Wall Street Journal. The U.S. especially objects to European plans to include business corruption in the pact. European negotiators say non-state-owned companies sometimes make illicit payments among themselves and that those corrupt business practices should be barred. The pact would bar bribes paid from one business to another and limit the lobbying activities of former government officials, among other things. And that goes on. It's amazing. We have Ted Nadeau is a stringer with Newsweek, as I recall, and he's on the line reporting from a conference out in California. Tom, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, Tom. Tell us about the conference that you're at.
Well, it's a meeting. It's actually called a ministerial conference and expo on agriculture, science, and technology. It's at the Sacramento Convention Center.
Mm-hmm.
It's going for 3 days, starting yesterday. Today is the second day for the conference. It's the third day of demonstrations opposing some of the things that are being discussed at the conference. And there are approximately 520 delegates at the conference from 100 countries around the world, primarily third world and developing nations, a large contingent of delegates.
Tom, I need you to talk just a little bit louder if you can.
Oh, sorry. Delegations from Europe didn't show up, so the attendance is down quite a bit. And outside the convention are people from about 130 different organizations that, for one reason or another, or for one other issue, oppose some of the issues being debated inside.
They're protesting.
Yes.
What types of protests are going on?
Well, they started on Sunday with some marches and protests in which about 22 people were arrested. These were in the area around the convention center. Yesterday they had a rally in front of the state capitol drawing about 1,500 people, a lot of street theater costumes, marching, music, that sort of thing. Only about eight were arrested yesterday. They're having about, so far as of today, there's about 36 have been arrested. There's another march and vigil that's forming up now that will march from the convention center down to the arraignment courts at the jailhouse courtrooms in a little further downtown at 6th Street. Where they're going to protest the felony arraignment of one woman arrested on Sunday, or yesterday.
Arrested for what?
I don't know the exact charge, but it was had to do with she's apparently sitting down and resisting or failing to move along. I have not talked with a lawyer that knows specifically the charge. All the people involved are saying that this is the one felony.
Wow. So we're speaking with Tom Nadeau. Tom, you're there for Newsweek, is that right?
Well, I'm a freelancer, and I sometimes string for organizations such as Newsweek, and I have done it for Reuters, and I'm here specifically to get information for Newsweek. I'm not writing.
You've gone faint again.
Hmm?
Yeah, you need to turn your volume back up again.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm at a public. I had to leave the area for a payphone, so. Anyway, I'm here as a picking up information for Newsweek on this conference. Yes.
So Tom, it sounds to me like this is basically a conference of the world food industry and government hand-in-hand bunch? I don't know quite how to do.
Well, the primary issue is this is all about biotechnology, genetically modified foods, genetically altered foods, and what that means in terms of safe foods, containment, contamination of different crops, and then particularly corporate control of the seeds that are devised to provide these genetically modified crops. And so the issues are biotechnology, is it safe, is it a, and what impact will it have on the cultures and economies of the third world, whether or not farmers will be able to be sustainable farms, farmers working on their own, or will they be required to purchase seeds every year from corporations that hold patents to the seeds that...
And presumably that's what the protesters are protesting about, is this whole Frankenfood.
Exactly. It's not just the safety issue, it's the control issue. They're referring to it as food democracy.
Uh-huh.
Will the farmers in the different nations be able to control their own futures by maintaining control of the crops, or will they become essentially tenant farmers for corporations, or buying each year their seeds and getting permission
right.
to...
As is already happening all over the world, it seems.
Well, one of the issues they're talking about is Percy Schmeiser, who's a farmer in Saskatchewan in Canada, who patented canola plant made its way onto his property, and
right. There's the pollen.
Monsanto has sued for patent protection, intellectual property rights over it, and essentially stopped them from growing anything. He's one of the highlighted people here.
Okay, great. Tom Nadeau. Tom, is there a website where people can find your work?
Sure, but it's not on this issue. It's on general things. But
We just have about 5 seconds here.
TomNadeau.com.
NADEAU, right?
Right.
Okay, great. Tom, thank you very much for calling with that report from the conference out there in California. We'll look forward on the news. You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
When I fell, my doctor didn't give me Tylenol. She gave me Advil.
I was surprised. My doctor gave me Advil for my back.
Advil is my doctor's choice for muscle pain.
Truth is, doctors nationwide choose Advil most for tough muscle pain, strains, and sprains. Advil can give you longer-lasting relief than Tylenol on tough pain.
Now I always make sure I have Advil in the house.
Make the doctor's choice your choice. For better relief, advance to Advil.
Hey, Steve?
Yeah?
I'm taking Nicorette like you said, but right now I really need a cigarette. And according to my schedule, I'm not supposed to take another piece for 2 hours, so what should I do? And don't tell me to tough it out, because it's not going to be pretty.
Take an extra piece?
Good idea.
When a really tough craving hits, just take an extra piece of Nicorette. As soon as you bite down, it delivers the medicine you need. Nicorette helps you quit one craving at a time. Use as directed. Follow dosing schedule. Individual results may vary. Support program can improve success rate.
Wouldn't it be great if you could get everything you need for successful estate planning in one package? Well, now you can. The new Master Estate Kit offers a collection of legal power that would cost you $500 or more if prepared by a lawyer. Here's what you get. First, a legal will kit, one praised by nearly 500,000 buyers. Second, a living will kit that assures your wishes will be followed in case of an irreversible injury or illness. And third, a power of attorney kit that includes all the required forms. Order today and we'll include the new Family Legal Guide. It answers all your questions about small claims court, landlord agreements, personal bankruptcy, and much more. An $80 value, the complete Master Estate Kit costs only $39.95. For immediate delivery of the Master Estate Kit and your free family legal guide, call 1-800-221-0393. Pay only $39.95 plus shipping. Every kit carries an unlimited money-back guarantee. Call 1-800-221-0393 now. That's 1-800-221-0393.
Show. Well, let's move on to somebody who is evil but very bright. That would be Ari Fleischer at the briefing today.
The job of anybody who is the White House press secretary is to faithfully articulate what the president is thinking and why he's thinking it. And that's what I do for a living.
Yeah, right. The job of the press secretary is to faithfully articulate what the president is thinking?
When do I get to my Game Boy? Hey, it's time for lunch. I want to take a nap. How do you spell Putin? Let me see. Who's the president of Afghanistan?
You know he tried to kill my dad? Oh, my God. There's Laura with my milk. Faithfully articulate what the president is thinking?
Alrighty, then.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Yes, thank you in Mandarin Chinese.
Is it really, Nancy?
Fun Ti La is like cool.
Chinese lesson now.
Wow, Nancy, you're so smart.
Fun Ti La.
You know everything. I should have watched MSNBC.
I want to be just like you. I figure all I need's a lobotomy and some tights.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You don't know what's going on. You've been away for far too long. You can't come back.
Welcome back. Uncommon Sense from the radical middle. Bill King in Hoffman Estates, Illinois, posts to our message board at TomHartman.com. Surprise, 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 as Gomer Pyle would have exclaimed in the Wall Street Journal today, quote, the Bush administration is considering a controversial plan to pay for Iraq's reconstruction by mortgaging its future oil revenue, end quote. Bill says, if you happen to see this post, Tom, you may recall I emailed you in March that this exact scenario would take place, also that the war cost would be extracted as well. What slays me is that this plan is being treated as if someone just thought of it recently. And then Barbara Roser of Ohio says, you didn't really think they were going to raise taxes on corporations to pay for this war, did you, Bill? Which led to an interesting conversation there. We have both the live chat room where we've got some folks. In fact, there's somebody just posted a joke. What's the difference between a Canadian backpacker and an American backpacker in Europe? The answer, the Canadian is the one with only one Canadian flag on his or her backpack. Listening to you and your guest on healthcare, this is from last week, the issue of today, very interesting to hear an example of pure idealism expressed, in this case, laissez-faire capitalism, by a true believer. Good job, Tom, in trying to focus him on the subject, healthcare in the U.S. Thought you did a good job of bringing out the exorbitant dollars the managed care CEOs take out of the system, eliciting the guest response that, quote, capitalism will solve that problem, end quote, which seems to be the rightest, silly last response whenever they have nothing else to offer. Oh, the right wing's silly response. Love your guest who brought out another point that the private company can say, I won't sell you that. Thanks, keep it up. This is from Hawaii, from Jeannie in Hawaii. Jeannie, thank you for posting and for participating in our program. Richard Leonard says, sends an email. He says, the media is an advertising vehicle for transnational corporations. That in itself makes them right-wing because the market is inherently amoral and unconcerned with issues of human dignity, worker rights, and environmental protection. How can a media that markets Hummers and Ford excursions as status symbols, regardless of their impact on the environment, be labeled liberal? Excellent question, Richard. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. Tune back in tomorrow. Same time, same place. This has been Tom Hartman. Thanks for joining us. See you tomorrow.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday. For Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that.